I need some kind of like specific ending to the newscast. I know this is the new way that we end the newscasts here now, but it doesn't feel like you're done.
Well,
you know what I like? I like an old-fashioned I'm Dave Schwann WGN news.
Well, I'll include that, and I'll just, you know what I'll do? I'll just say the end the next time.
Okay.
I'll just say the end.
Yeah.
And is that clear enough?
I like you news. Don't you news people at the when you're writing scripts, don't you put 30? Isn't that a thing? Isn't that a thing?
Not on our scripts here, but the 30 is something you use.
That's an old journalism.
Right. It's an old journalism thing.
What does that
thing.
Mean exactly?
I don't know. I don't know. But you see it. You still see it on news releases every so often.
Yeah.
That's 30.
Yeah, if you could say the end, that would be great.
Okay.
Because doesn't it, what is it that you say now?
I'm Dave Schwann, WGN News. Yeah. Next news when it happens, next scheduled news at 9:30.
Dot, dot, dot.
Dot, dot, dot.
Doesn't feel, yeah. So try it out with your new way.
Okay, I'll try it out. I'm Dave Schwann, WGN News. Next news when it happens, next scheduled news at 9:30. Dot, dot, dot. The end.
Schwanny wearing his diamond-studded glasses today in honor of Elton's final show. Morning Captain Newsman Fantastic. Morning Captain Sportsman Fantastic.
Just call me Tiny Dancer.
No Brown Dirt Cowboy, huh?
Excuse me.
Captain Fantastic and the Brown Dirt Cowboy.
I know somebody who was at the final concert in Stockholm, Sweden.
And who might that
Stockholm,
be?
Sweden.
Yeah.
Who I might want that to talk, be? I want to talk like the Swedish chef on the Muppets.
Dirty, 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 dirty.
Elton Jim Toronto.
Hey.
Was at the final show.
I had to be, right? I mean, come on.
You had to be.
I didn't think I was going to.
Didn't you go to the final few shows, actually, in Europe?
Yeah, I really wasn't planning on going to Stockholm because it was the last show in that it was originally scheduled for 2020, and these then had to be rescheduled because
all the
of COVID.
Pandemic shows, right?
The last show of the tour was supposed to be in 2021 at Dodger Stadium.
Yeah,
but then everything happened, so I was like, "Well, there's really no big emotional connection to Stockholm,
right?"
So about 6 or 8 months ago, I said, well, I've always wanted to see Elton perform in Paris. Never saw that. He lives in Paris. He recorded Goodbye Old Brick Road and Honky Chateau and Don't Shoot Me, some of his best albums in Paris. So he really likes Paris.
20, this is like when you start talking about 45 RPM records and microphones.
So anyway, I went to the Paris shows.
There's a good, that's true.
The
yes.
Ampex 473 recorder had a good...
okay, well then, yeah, I went to the last show. Thank you, Dean.
So now, next, did you, now when next, you had
yeah,
these
I did
records,
go, Dean.
So you went to Paris.
So I went to Paris my wife and I went and we spent some time there. We spent about 4 or 5 days and then we saw two of the shows on the 27th and 28th of June. And then everybody at that show, all these big diehard fans that have traveled like I do to see shows, they were like, are you going to go to Stockholm? Are you going to go to Stockholm? I was like, well, no, I don't really think so. I think I'm done.
Oh, you were disloyal.
Yeah, and they kind of looked at me and then I was kind of like, is this going to be it? Is this really going to be it? I mean, he is going to be, based on possible health.
He's going to be a performer.
But he's going to perform again.
He's touring. But
right. And he always said from the get-go, he's going to keep performing, just not doing these city-to-city, month-long, country-to-country tours.
Yeah.
Because it takes time.
Right.
So after the Paris shows, I remember being on the plane and saying to myself, how do I not go to the last? I was at the first one in Allentown, Pennsylvania on September 8th,
how many shows have you been to now?
215.
Oh, wow.
I saw 36 on this tour.
Yeah.
Five countries.
Schwanny, who have you... is there a performer that you've seen multiple times?
Yes, but not even close to 215.
Who would it be?
Probably
the Archies?
No.
Archies?
No.
The Archies.
It was the 1910 Fruit Gum Company.
That was going to be my second choice.
Harper's Bazaar. The Neon Philharmonic.
Feeling groovy.
No, probably Oscar Peterson.
Oh, look at you, Mr. Jazzman.
I saw Oscar Peterson several times myself. It was
a couple times in a club.
Back in my jazz
Never
days.
Forget that.
No.
Was that your smooth jazz or just your real jazz?
Well, it coincided with my smooth jazz days, but I hated smooth jazz so much that I like seeing actual jazz performers like Oscar Peterson.
Yeah, no.
There are some other, in the jazz idiom, I probably saw maybe 6 or 8 times.
Oh,
215.
Isn't that crazy?
It is, but you know what?
You know what? He likes it. Who cares?
There was a guy at one of the Paris shows. 300.
Wow.
He had a sign. 300.
Andy, how about you? Multiple shows?
Billy Joel, a few times. And I actually saw him with Elton John once.
Oh, did you see the face to face?
Yeah.
At Wrigley or where?
I can't remember where it was. Yeah, it was at Wrigley.
I wrote the program for that concert.
I saw him. I think did he also perform with them at? Someplace else, Elton and
Billy. He was at. I mean, they performed at Rosemont Horizon
I saw him, Billy Joel twice there, and once was with Elton John.
They played, saw him twice also.
Yeah. I don't think I've seen anybody more than like maybe 4 times.
But you said you saw Tina Turner quite a few times, right?
Maybe 4 or 5 times.
Yeah,
that seems enough to me.
Is it really? I was 17 by the time I saw him 4 times.
Yeah. Turns out we do need another hero at some point.
But it was very cool. He gave me a shout out.
Was it emotional?
You know what? I didn't think it was going to be emotional. And then on the first, because there was 2 shows in Stockholm, the first night during your song, right, the second to the last song, I got a little jolt. And then the second night, the last night.
Final show
of the whole thing. He started to introduce the band.
Mm.
And I know a few of the guys in the band, so I could see them starting to get a little. And then I sort of, and then he gave me a shout out.
Did you cry?
I did cry. Yeah, I did. I was choked up. I wasn't weeping. I wasn't like, you know.
Wailing
and weeping.
Oh,
but
Don't leave! Don't go! Don't go!
But I was.
Security carrying out the. Swedish.
Arms and legs flailing.
Carried off. But this has been such a. It's been 50 years of my life.
50 years of your life, but also this farewell has been 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, it started.
Like.
I mean, it was off for 2 years, but
it started, and then the pandemic came.
2018. This has been a 5-year. Like I said, 5 countries. Yeah. I mean, so it's been quite a cool. It's I've met a lot of people. It's been fun.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting now to see. You know, does something fill in that gap? I don't know. It's been such a major part, but it was very cool. And like I said, he gave me a shout out.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to throw cold water on your Elton John parade, but it turns out, if you go on YouTube, you can hear he had a very nice speech.
Yeah.
In which he thanked fans, including very clearly, you can hear him say Jim Toronto, which he's done many times.
Yeah.
But it turns out that the version that was put on YouTube was an edited version. That Elton John, apparently, like Schwanee, has kind of a foul mouth. I don't know if you heard a few weeks ago, a month ago something, we ran part of a newscast where we had to actually bleep Schwanee.
No!
Because he just let it rip one day.
Whoa! Nice!
He let it rip, and we had to...
The big word?
Well, Jack, do we have the Schwanee? Do we have the Schwanee? This is a.
It wasn't the whole newscast. It was the weather.
Yeah, he was. Well, that's okay.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
That's okay to drop a few bombs in the weather forecast. This is Schwanee a few weeks ago.
The forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center, increasing clouds today, high only around 5, maybe some rain this afternoon as well. Rain and maybe showers overnight tonight, low in the 50s. Cloudy, windy, cold for the season to. With a chance of rain and in the morning and a high around 44, 46 now at O'Hare. I'm Dave Schwann. Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
All seven words.
He used all the seven words.
All the seven words you can't say in one.
This was revealed on the anniversary of the Lee Elia rant.
Oh, yes, right. Nice.
That's how that started.
And print it.
Yeah. And we learned that Elton John also apparently has a foul mouth.
He says the F word quite a bit.
This is what Elton John said at his final concert.
We're ending it in the beautiful city of Stockholm in Sweden. My very first concert in Sweden was on the 7th of July in 1971, so more or less 52 years ago to the day I first played in Stockholm. So I would like to thank all the people who have been to so many multiple shows, 20 over there from Christoph, Tony, how many? 33. 40 show Danny, 110 now, 178 Wayne Martin, 10 Fairway Eric Roaches, 215 Toronto, there's a 200 down there.
Wow, I must have been in a zone. I didn't hear that.
Yeah, you're a little, you drank the Kool-Aid, the Elton John Kool-Aid a long time ago.
I must have heard what I wanted to hear.
10 Fairway Eric Roaches, 215
There were a lot of
yeah
surrounding your name.
Well, that's terms of endearment,
I guess so.
Yeah.
I'm Dave Schwann.
these bleep versions of the show may be the funniest thing that we've had on the show in a very long time.
Do you ever leap for the, you know, for the dump button and miss it? Have you ever done that? Where it gets out?
No.
No?
No, because we have, what was it, like 10 or 15 seconds if something happens.
Yeah.
There's quite a bit of time to, you know, get it. You don't have to, like, boom, get it as it's happening.
Because that's a couple of times when I've filled in and people have said things and I'm like, whoa, you know, I'm looking at the producer. Did you hit it? I'm going to hit it, you know. Yeah.
I've had to hit it once in my entire career. It was this last year with Hamp and OB.
With Shawnee. Oh, you got
it. It wasn't Hamp or OB. It was a caller.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I'm surprised that Hamp hasn't...
just let it slip.
No, accidentally.
No. They're professionals. Come on.
Yeah. Sure they are. When we have OB do a theater review...
I can't wait for that.
I'm going to encourage him to use as many bad words as possible.
You should have sent him to see Tommy. That would have been great. Could you imagine him at a food thing? What the hell are you talking about? What is this guy, deaf, dumb, and blind? What does that mean?
All right. Well, we'll see if we have to edit the far-flung forecast.
See what
other F-words the Chwannies put into the far-flung forecast. All coming up next. So I never really realized how many F-words we have in this.
It's hard to say far-flung forecast without...
Very careful.
Yeah. Right. But here with today's installment, Dave... Bleepin' Schwann.
Thank you very much, Dean. Good morning, everyone. Today we travel to Dayton, Tennessee. Dayton, Tennessee.
Now, we've all heard of Dayton, Ohio.
Oh, yes. Now, we've heard of Dayton, Ohio.
I've never heard of Dayton, Tennessee.
Dayton, Tennessee. Settled.
Is it like Dayton, D-A-T-I-N?
No.
Apostrophe?
It's
like
D-A-Y.
I'm going out and dating that girl.
I'm going out and dating
it's
Maryland.
It's D-A-Y-T-O-N. Settled in the 1820s, but the town was, in fact, renamed Dayton after Dayton, Ohio, and finally incorporated in 1903. But
1903.
You said 1903.
But we mention Dayton, Tennessee, because 98 years ago, on this date, it was the center of attention of the United States because of the Scopes Monkey Trial.
Oh.
Inherit the Wind.
Inherit the Wind, the play modeled after the Scopes Monkey Trial.
You know, if only a radio station had broadcast that historic trial.
You know, it's funny you should mention that, because there was a radio station that had just gone on the air a year or two before.
Must have been a very pioneering station.
It was definitely a cutting-edge pioneering radio station.
One day feature bleeping newscasters.
Was it owned by the world's greatest newspaper?
It was owned by the world's greatest newspaper, a station called WGN.
Huh.
And one Quinn Ryan. There is a man I wish I could have met. You talk about a pioneering announcer. Quinn Ryan did everything on this radio station and went to Dayton, Tennessee to cover the trial, which took place 98 years ago this week in Dayton, Tennessee. And we have Dayton, Tennessee now with sunny skies and 80 degrees.
If you see the film Inherit the Wind, at the very end when they are announcing the verdict, somebody runs out with a microphone,
yep,
and there's a microphone,
yep,
flag that says WGN,
yes, it does,
in
that's
the movie.
Right. And in the play, they mention WGN.
Don't we have the microphone?
Yes. It's
oh, really?
It's in the hall. It's down the hall.
Is in the trophy case?
In a big
yes.
show, in a big showcase,
yes,
down there.
Yeah. Yep. Hey, in fact, it was on loan to the Smithsonian Institution for a while.
Hmm.
That's why it wasn't here. I thought, Dean, you may have taken it. It was in your basement or something.
When he was doing WDC, what was your basement radio station?
My kid radio, my favorite radio station. That's one of the first things that I remember seeing when I came in for the job interview here 100 years ago. And, you know, they're walking me down the hallway. And oh, when we were over at that dump in Tribune Tower, they had a giant...
Now who's going to get...
Now they had a giant glass wall,
yeah,
with trophies and a piece of the Berlin Wall. I mean, historic moments in WGN history. And here was this big old microphone that I had only seen a microphone like that in Three Stooges movies. Quiet, you numbskulls, I'm broadcasting. And I was like, I stopped for a second and looked at it, and it said, you know, it gave the history that was the microphone that was used to broadcast this trial. And wasn't it the first, it had to be the first.
Remote
broadcast. Well, remote, but it certainly was broadcast of a trial.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. In yeah. fact, it not only was one of, if not the first trial broadcasts, but it was actually, they set up a small network of stations around the country.
So other stations could also broadcast the
and
trial.
By the way, we have visited Dayton, Tennessee. The courthouse
yeah.
that the trial took place in is still there, used for governmental purposes. And there's a museum downstairs in the basement of the courthouse that mentions WGN and the coverage from the Tribune, the New York Times, and really reporters from everywhere. It was an international story.
And people know about the Scopes trial. Was about that there was a teacher that was teaching
He was teaching
evolution
and was arrested. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why they call it the monkey trial.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's nice to see that we've progressed in our thinking in America.
Yeah.
It's all these years
talk about
later,
all of us monkeys here on Sunday morning. That's right.
Right. That's what, when we finally get thrown in jail, it'll be called the monkey's trial again, but only because Schwani loves Davy Jones so much.
Here we come.
Walking down the street. Time once again for our check on all things health. Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer, Central DuPage Hospital. Always a ray of sunshine on our Sunday mornings. Dr. Most, good morning, my friend.
Good morning, Dean. How are you doing?
Doing very, very well. A couple of pretty big medical news stories this week. One of them having to do with the availability of over-the-counter birth control pills. Was this something that was anticipated to happen? And, you know, what's your feeling about it all?
Yeah, I don't think it was anticipated to happen. You know, it's available pretty much around the world, and we in the United States have been very hesitant to put it to a point of being over-the-counter. Now, medications going from prescription over-the-counter are not uncommon, but that's after they've been used for a long time and have been proven to be safe, which is the case with the O-pill that moved here. So not surprising, but probably very good, I would think, for women's health, that individuals will be able to do this without needing to go to their physician and having those discussions.
Yeah, this was such a point of controversy over the years of, you know, the availability of an over-the-counter contraceptive pill. Should parents, you know, be alerted if their young children are using them? And now I guess all of that has passed, huh?
It has. And that's probably the unfortunate part about it, is exactly what you said, the communication between the parent, the child, or the individual, I shouldn't say child, but the individual and their doctor, so that they can go over everything and talk more about just the contraceptive method that they're going to use, but also more about safe sex, about sexually transmitted diseases, right, about a whole bunch of different things that definitely need to have a conversation between the doctor and the patient. So before they go to use this over-the-counter medication, you would hope that they would check in with their physician and have that discussion.
Do you think that the Dobbs Supreme Court overturning of Roe v. Wade had played a role in this coming to the shelves?
You know, Jim, you would hope that it didn't, that you would take politics out of it and let science stand for itself. But really, it's, you know, that 800-pound gorilla in the room saying, wow, this probably did have an impact.
It just seems coincidental.
Absolutely.
Well, it definitely seems ironic.
Right.
I mean, that's for sure, that in these days where that's such a hot-button issue, that soon you'll be able to just go to Walgreens and get
a Snickers. Some Doritos.
Some shoelaces. Oh, no, yeah.
Some film. Get some pictures developed. Oh, and give me one of those.
An over-the-counter contraceptive pill.
Yep.
What about cost? I mean, will it be prohibitive? Will it? How do they normally work something like that?
You know, it probably won't be prohibitive, but it'll be really interesting to see not only how they price it, but who pays for it. Will insurance companies pay for it, even though it's over-the-counter? Pricing should not be bad. It's used, like I said, around the world, and it has been. So, you know, it's not like it's a new drug that they're still trying to recoup the cost of that from the research and development side of it. So certainly I would think that they're going to be looking at quite a large market, and individuals who are going to want to do this would probably be willing to pay. You know, they're going to start doing the math in their minds of, okay, do I need to go to the doctor and get all these tests done before I get this? So that's the part that really needs to be communicated, is you need to have a well-educated consumer anytime you're going to use any of the over-the-counter medications.
Yeah, as is the case with any over-the-counter medication, misuse of them can be very dangerous. What are the risks of using too many of these? You know, it's a lot of people say, well, if it says to take one pill, if I take three of them, I'll be three times as protected. What kind of risks are involved in, you know, now that this is going to be so much more readily available?
Absolutely. And you made a very good point the way you said it, too, is I'm going to take three because, oh, I missed the last 2 days. One of these is that this drug must be taken at the same time every day. So when you miss a day or you miss 2 days, it's not like, oh, take two more and I'll be all caught up.
Right.
No, the hormonal imbalance of the body for a female will be thrown off if you miss one of these. And therefore, the medication will be deemed probably to not work for a full cycle. So it's one of those where, depending on the population you're dealing with, and sometimes these are going to be younger teens or older teens, you know, people that may not be as astute in knowing that you need to take it every day in order for this to work. So again, I still come back to, it's great that it's over the counter, that you can get it now with ease, but please have that discussion with your doctor so you understand the risk benefits and how to take it properly.
That's exactly what I was thinking while you were explaining that. While you'll be able to just, you know, go over the counter and buy this now, it sure seems like you still need to be under the advice of some doctor, at least, of how to use this, which is honestly becoming more prohibitive. Trying to get an appointment with a doctor, I would assume this is also the case with gynecologists, but it's no easy thing to get an appointment with the doctor these days.
Months.
Except Dr. Most, of course.
Well, sure.
Right.
Always available to us.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll tell you, it's a big focus on a lot of health systems. I could tell you, Northwestern is probably it's one of their biggest focuses right now is access and how do we make doctors more accessible. And one of the things we're doing is using more what we call physician extenders, whether it be a physician assistant or an advanced practice nurse, you know, someone that can take care of some of the more routine things that, I mean, for my blood pressure check, okay, do you need to spend 20 minutes with the doctor there? Or would 20 minutes with an APN going over your lab tests and your medications be good enough? So certainly we're trying to look to make sure that we do have enough access because, like you said, if I'm going to try to use this medication and say, oh, I want to touch base with my doctor and I can't get in for 3 months, I'm going to make a decision there of whether I'm going to try it without his use or wait the 3 months.
Right, right. Or, I mean, I think many of my, probably the majority of my encounters with my physician have been online or on the telephone. Going in is, it's not an option. It's too difficult to get an appointment these days.
It's amazing what the impact COVID had on the medical practices, where we essentially almost shut down offices because we didn't want all these people sitting in waiting rooms. And we found that telehealth actually does work well for many things.
Yeah.
Much more convenient for the patient, much more convenient sometimes for the doctor. But certainly that patient who doesn't have to leave work, go to find a parking space, pay for parking, get in, wait in the waiting room. You know, it can be a half a day versus I take it in my office and I have 30 minutes and it's going to be well use of my time.
One of the other things that I wanted to chat with you about is the findings this week that the artificial sweetener aspartame may be related to causing cancer. There's been a lot of talk over the years about artificial sweeteners and how safe they may or may not be. Now aspartame is being, chosen and whether or not people will remove it from their products remains to be seen. But what are the actual dangers, doctor, of using this artificial sweetener, which a lot of people sure do?
Yeah, and you make a really good point. This is, I don't want to say it's cutting news, but it certainly is. This just came out a couple of days ago from the World Health Organization saying, hey, you know what? It's okay to use some, but boy, you better be really careful and don't go beyond that daily limit of 40 milligrams per kilogram. And people say, well, why do I have to do math? I'll tell you, doing the math once is probably the right thing to do. So somebody who weighs, you know, let's say 150 pounds, you know, you should not have more than, it's a lot, you know, 9 cans of soda. Well, I'll tell you, there's a lot of people out there that drink more than 9 cans of soda.
Right,
so
a day?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Absolutely. I've seen that.
And you got to remember, they're just using that as the bar to say, here, if you're only going to drink a soda, here's what the bar is set. But you have to remember, that sweetener is used in other things. So you really have to look and do your math to see what you're eating and make sure that you're not hitting those marks.
Yeah, you have to read those labels. You'll be surprised where an artificial sweetener turns up because it's often not in a product which is sweet, but it's still put into those places, I guess, to replace sugar. So we need to watch the amount of products using aspartame. What about other artificial sweeteners? A lot of people use Splenda these days. They use there's a whole different variety of non-caloric sweeteners that are out there right now. Which ones do you think are safest?
Well, you know, it's interesting that these are foods. So you'd think that the Food and Drug Administration would have all this research on them in long term, and they don't. So we're sitting there still now trying to figure out, look at aspartame. You know, it's been used for, you know, years and years and years. So really, it's very difficult to say what is the safest sweetener. And it's more about what else could you use instead of that, or do you really need the sweeteners?
Yeah. A text from the 630 area code. I'm a coffee drinker. I like a sweetener in my coffee, it says. I'm also borderline diabetic. Should I use sugar or sweet and low?
Well, it's a good point. I mean, if you look at some of the stevias and some of those that are plant-based, and they're deemed safe. So I would say using one of those where it's more of a natural one and is not going to impact your blood sugar as much as, you know, putting, you know, plain old sugar in there, especially for the diabetics, because we're more concerned about their glucose level rising and not having enough insulin to offset that.
Yeah, what about Splenda? Isn't that also derived from a natural source, not a chemical one?
Yeah, Splenda is sucralose, so it's more of a complex sugar. So certainly is probably much more safer than the others.
Yeah, got to do a little research. I know it's kind of a pain, but you want a little research, you want a little cancer. I mean, that's what it's come down to, unfortunately. Your questions for Dr. Most when we come right back. Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer, Central DuPage Hospital, in his weekly Sunday visit. Your questions for Dr. Most, welcome right now at 312-981-7200. That'll get you either on our phone line, which we always love hearing from you, or on our text line, 312-981-7200. And the 773 area code says, I'm reading the label on my Diet Pepsi right now, and it says that it does contain aspartame, but it does not give a measurement of how much aspartame is included. How would I know so I can keep an eye on the numbers that you talked about?
Yeah, you know what? We're going to talk about food labeling next week. It's one of the topics I'd like to talk about because we might see a big change in food labeling here in the United States shortly. So make sure you listen in next week on that one, but a little teaser. But really what you do is you have to almost do your homework, right? Because when we put products and we list the ingredients, and you look at a list of ingredients on any product, and they list it based on the amount of that product in the product. That's a difficult way to say it. But if you look, number one, in breakdown of Diet Coke, it's going to say water. Well, these sugars are so powerful that they don't need to use a lot. So it gets to the point where they're going to have all these other ones that they have to list how much, gets to a point of some of these where it's the sweetener, right, and they don't have to put that amount in. So you almost have to go and do your homework and go online and do a search because of the way that we allow labeling, food labeling here in the United States.
Lots of texts asking about alternative sweeteners. What does Dr. Most think about monk fruit as a sweetener, stevia? There's a whole listing on here. If you didn't want to use sugar, what would you recommend?
Yeah, I mean, I like stevia. I think it's really good, and it's, you know, it's more natural based. So that's probably one that would be really good. But you also have to look and go, you have to do your homework, right? Because it is everywhere. We talk about, you know, just the sugars, but no, it's in candy, it's in chewing gum, it's in bakery goods. So you really have to look to do your homework if you're going to be looking at products that you're buying. But you can look and sit there and say, go through all of the sucralose, like we just talked about, right? Is the Splenda. You know, that is essentially, it's almost like glucose, except there's one genetic modification made or chemical modification made. So that one's probably very safe. The bad thing is that we've tested them on rodents. We really haven't done enough testing in large scale on humans, and that's what you're going to start to see. But again, they're so loosely limited or so loosely tracked that it's very difficult to say this would be the one to use.
Yeah, somebody texted in and said aspartame is in about 5,000 products.
Yeah,
so about that. You have to read the labels. And normally, I am a label reader. Aspartame or the sweetener is normally one of the very last things that it lists. So you have to go through this, you know, long list of chemicals that you have no idea what they mean. Until you see sucralose or aspartame or something which is a sweetener. 630 area code, why is it that pink eye seems to be so rampant right now?
Yeah. So pink eye, let's just talk about it, right? What is it? The words just tell me what the symptom is. So now you have to look at it and say, okay, what can cause pink eye? In the spring, can we get pink eye from allergies? Absolutely. Can we see pink eye and running through, rampant through schools because how contagious it is? Absolutely. And then here's the wild card right now, is that the XBB strain of COVID, one of the symptoms is pink eye. So we are seeing a lot of it. Whether we've gotten away from washing our hands as frequently as we used to be, you know, during COVID, we were washing our hands religiously. Have we stopped doing that? You touch your eye, you shake someone's hand, and you can give them pink eye very easily because these viruses and bacteria that cause it are extremely contagious. That being said, it's not a very devastating disease. For the most part, it's going to be self-limiting and run its course. But in some cases, you may need some antibiotic eye drops to take care of the bacterial infections.
815 area code is asking, does the doctor believe once on a CPAP machine, always on a CPAP machine? This assists people who are breathing, who have sleep apnea. And I've seen television commercials. Oh, one of these weeks, Kev, we have to talk about just all the claims that some of these television commercials make on the things that can be cured. But I've seen a television commercial that says, this replaces the CPAP machine. It just looks like a patch on somebody's arm or something like that. Is there an alternative? It didn't make any sense to me.
No, it's interesting the way that you saw that commercial. So what you're talking about is a product called Inspire, which when you saw it's a patch on their skin, what it is that activates the CPAP machine, or excuse me, the CPAP portion in their mouth or in the back of their throat when they go to sleep. So it's one of those where you turn it on, you turn it off, but it's surgically implanted in the back of your throat there to act just as a CPAP machine.
Oh, they don't say that.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Oh,
she's lying there like in heaven.
Big smile.
You don't know that there's a whole contraption going on.
In the back of her throat.
Yeah. So has it been effective, or is it just one of these TV things that...
Oh, no, it's been effective. You know, and these are placed in the hospital. So an ear, nose, and throat doctor will place that and then place the monitor as well. So that's one way that you could say get off of CPAP. Another way, a lot of CPAP is due to the weight of individuals. So really, if you lose some weight, sometimes that will certainly help. But individuals say, I'm going to stop my CPAP. They have to understand that the health risk associated with sleep apnea are much more important than learning how to sleep with a CPAP machine, which, like you've said, have gotten better over the years. They used to be these big, huge, loud contraptions,
right?
And certainly they're getting smaller and more quiet, but the impact it's making on individuals' health with heart disease, hypertension, you know, sudden death, those are really important.
Not to mention super attractive to your sleeping partner. Got this, you're basically wearing a catcher's mask on your face.
Just to work it in.
Really?
Yeah, you just have to, you know,
okay,
become a fetish.
All right, it becomes like a baseball.
Yeah.
I never thought of that. I never thought like a Chris Chelios kind of thing. It might be
a creature from the Black Lagoon.
You have an active imagination, my friend. It is super important, but it's something that's worth reapproaching then for a lot of people because the early incarnations of CPAP and the masks and facial devices apparently has changed. I've seen where there are devices that you put in your mouth that push forward like your upper teeth and I don't know, moves your tongue out of the way. I don't even know what it does, but it just seemed like that seems a little choky also.
Yeah, but with all the sleep apnea, what happens is the back of our throat essentially closes to a point where we're not getting enough oxygen, and then eventually you stop breathing. And if the body tells you, hey, time to start breathing, and then you force yourself to start breathing, that's why you have poor sleep patterns, and unfortunately that's put you at the risk. So all of the CPAP, whether they're, you know, things that you're putting in your mouth, the Inspire, the CPAP machine, the goal is to keep that airway open the entire night so that you can sleep safely.
Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer, Central DuPage Hospital. Always a great visit, and I hope you have a great Sunday, my friend. Thank you.
You got it, Dean. We'll talk soon.
I was going through the text line here. You know, we get a lot of questions in for Dr. Most, and we only have a certain amount of time to answer the questions. So, Shwani, Andy,
mm-hmm.
Elton, Jim, I thought we could answer the medical question.
Oh, sure.
Got any more wives' tales you want to throw out?
Calling Dr. Howard, Dr. Fine, Dr. Howard.
My God, this is really...
How difficult can
it be? Is this legal?
Calling Dr. Howard, Dr. Fine, Dr. Howard.
I think we're breaking the law here.
One of them says, I'm going outpatient for hernia surgery. What can I expect?
It's going to hurt.
I've had that done, actually.
Oh.
Ooh, all right. Oh, all right. There we go. Dr. Andy.
What can we expect?
I was actually born with a little hernia, and it reared its ugly head near the abdomen.
Huh.
And went in for outpatient. They kind of put me in the little twilight action.
Okay.
And I was awake during the whole thing, basically.
Yeah.
And it was really weird to kind of be able to hear the doctors talking, and you're just thinking, okay, this is pretty serious here. But, yeah, it was after a while.
Did you hear any of the doctors go, hey, has anyone got a cigarette lighter?
Yeah. No, but I do remember them listening to, I think it was vinyl records on the... what's that? Sirius XM channel,
the classic vinyl.
Classic vinyl. Yeah,
the doctor going, hey, nurse, you're a good dancer.
Awesome.
Yeah, they were discussing the merits of, I can't remember what the song was,
Blue
whether
Oyster
it was
Cult.
Really a classic or not.
Don't fear the Reaper.
To get back to our medical question here, what was post-op like? Was painful?
Yeah, it wasn't painful, but it was, uncomfortable. You had to redress the area a couple times.
All right.
And
now that's a hole in your stomach, right?
Basically, yeah. And the thing is, and my luck, I got a sinus infection right after that. And coughing.
Oh, how do you cough?
Was not fun.
Coughing is painful.
Yeah, and that was not fun.
You couldn't lift anything, right?
Couldn't lift anything. You had to be real careful. They actually had to have somebody come pick me up, and because you were under the anesthetic, so they wouldn't let you go unless you had someone there to take you home. And they actually encouraged someone to stay over just in case, but it wasn't that bad.
How was the healing? Like 2 weeks, a month?
It was about probably about 2.5, 3 weeks. Yeah.
You know what else I would recommend? We're not doctors, but we can.
We pretend to be.
Yeah, that's not stopping us. After you have your hernia operation, you know what to expect from Andy. I'm also going to write a prescription for you for Schwani to come to your house and sing soothing songs to you. Maybe you know a nice lullaby that you can sing to this our hernia friend here. So that's been our new feature, medical information without any knowledge whatsoever. Tune in again next week.
Spring
nice to
like
have old Blue Eyes back here on Sunday morning.
And Mars. In other words,
why don't you do a show on Sinatra music?
Oh,
you think it would last?
I don't know.
You think anybody would listen?
He's blue eyes. In other words, he's got eyes of blue. Of course they would.
Baby, kiss me.
Schwani, you probably are already aware of this because you're a history buff, number one. But also, are you singing? Who's singing?
Oh,
not me.
Let me.
Well, if you could throw in as many distractions as possible, that would be great.
All right.
So, Schwani, you're a history buff and a space buff, as I am also. Do you know that it was on this day in 1969 that the Apollo 11...
That is correct.
Mission took off.
That's right.
For the moon.
It took off. It didn't land.
Took off
right.
On July the 16th. But landed on the moon, right? On July 20th.
On the 20th.
Yes. Yeah. One small step for man.
Yep.
One giant step.
God. Over 50 years ago, can you believe
Isn't that crazy?
Wow.
I remember it like it was yesterday. It's weird when you say it's 50 years ago, because that sounds like something your parents would say.
I know, but it's now 54 years.
It's more than 50.
Remember seeing Raggedy Ann 50 years ago.
My mom kept, I still have, she kept all the newspapers.
Oh, yeah.
I still have them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did. I finally got rid of them. I thought, why am I keeping this?
Yeah, I know.
I can go on my phone and open up that page. But I had a Sun Times for that when we landed on the moon. Of course, the picture of Neil Armstrong.
Yeah.
And my dad has shined his shoes that morning. So there's a ring from the shoe polish.
From the shoe polish.
From the shoe polish bottle.
Oh,
right in the middle of this.
On this newspaper of all newspapers.
He didn't want to get shoe polish on the table.
He's like moon schmoon. I gotta have shoes.
I gotta have a shine on my shoe. That's the mark of a successful man. My dad always used to say that. People will judge you based on whether or not your shoes are shine.
Oh my God.
An historic moment that people of a certain age will never forget. When man first landed.
And now, hopefully, we're going back in a couple of years.
Next year.
But we beat China? Because isn't China...
They're very seriously looking at it also. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
To go back to the moon or to Mars?
Yeah, to go to the moon. To land on the moon.
Isn't there a plan, though, to also put a man on Mars?
Long term, yes. In fact, you know, when we were at the Kennedy Space Center a few years ago, I asked somebody about it, and they were quite serious. They said in the 2030s. That's not all that far away now.
That far away.
So, wasn't there a thing where if you go there, you have to sign you're back. Not going to come back?
Well, it's going to take 6 months just to get there. Yeah. It's a one-way trip there and back. So, seriously, at this point in time, if you go, you're going to be gone for well over a year.
Isn't it terrible, though, that we don't know? I mean, we know more about Kim Kardashian. Name me the people that have walked on the moon. Can't do it.
Neil Armstrong. Neil
I know. Armstrong. You can name a couple, but my Buzz point is Aldrin. There's only been like 14 or 15, and we don't even know. That is an unbelievable accomplishment.
Who was the command pilot for Apollo 12?
Wasn't it Lovell?
Nope.
Or Cernan?
Nope.
12?
Apollo 12.
I don't know.
Pete Conrad.
Wow.
Any of them married to Kanye West?
I mean, we should
chime in if any of them are in any way related to Kanye West. But you're 100% correct. I mean, we only pay attention. It's interesting.
That's an incredible accomplishment.
Another anniversary on this day, and I don't know, Shawnee, if you know this. Shawnee's got this amazing memory for things that happened on this day. Well, I think that this particular next note does very much matter, but it was on this day in 1945 that the first atomic bomb was tested just south of Los Alamos, New Mexico, known as the Trinity Test. Mm-hmm. A group of scientists led by Robert Oppenheimer put it all together.
Is that where they're releasing the film now?
Next Friday
it comes out.
There will be a movie opening called Oppenheimer, which I've already seen.
Oh, you have?
Directed by Christopher Nolan of The Dark Knight fame, Inception, Tenet. His movies are complex and challenging, and it's a very interesting story about the father of the atomic bomb, really. Which I'll review later on, but later on this morning, I'm going to play back my interview that I did in New York with Christopher Nolan about this very historic moment that, we're back into a threat of nuclear war with Putin threatening, nuclear attack on Ukraine. Does the United States retaliate with something like that? We're back into this. I don't know if we're exactly back in Cold War status, but...
It seems reminiscent of it, though.
It seems dangerously reminiscent of it. And one thing that I took out of this movie is, what an amazing scientific discovery, developing this bomb, which ended World War II in a very tragic way for the people of Japan. But... the irony that something was developed in which we could completely destroy ourselves is kind of tragic in a way. And the movie isn't really heavy-handed in delivering that message. But I couldn't help walking away with the irony of telling this story and what it means in today's world.
And among the... people that were working on that was a group of scientists right here at the University of Chicago, Enrico Fermi. They worked on that and successfully split the atom in a basement or a...
Wasn't it underneath the bleachers or something?
Underneath a stadium that was there. Yeah, a soccer stadium or something like that.
Well, my wife and I, when we were in France recently, we went to the beaches of Normandy.
Mm. Oh, that's on my list.
Yeah, that's...
I have got to see that.
I want to go, and I sort of don't want to go. It's like visiting the Dachau.
Auschwitz. Which we have done, too.
And all of those that I would be fascinated to see, because I've seen them in black and white films for my entire life. But I think I would leave so... Did you leave depressed when you visited?
What was depressing was... when you looked at some footage, because you went into the cemetery, and very similar to Arlington Cemetery with the white crosses, 9,000 American veterans at the American cemetery there. But what was more depressing was you go into this theater and they show you this footage of the actual D-Day.
Mm.
If the footage in Ukraine was in black and white, as opposed to color, like we see it on TV,
yeah.
It looks identical.
Yeah.
There are, it's like we're fighting a 50 or 78, a 70-year-old war.
Yeah, right.
It's the tanks. It's the bombings.
The shelled out
the
buildings,
shellings. Yeah. It's like this look, we haven't moved one inch. Yeah. We haven't learned one lesson. Yeah. But what's ironic is when you see those photos of it when it was a wartime theater, a wartime scenario of the beaches and these big, aircraft, and all these tanks coming in the water like you see in Saving Private Ryan. And now it is this beautiful, serene beach. And you go, what happened
what
here?
What kind of hell happened in this place?
Right. And then you turn and you see the shoreline with the hills where the Germans were waiting
yeah.
And you see how close, and it's just, and then there's literally bunkers still like concrete bunkers still built into those hills off the beach that still have the guns and it's very sobering.
I know Shawnee. Andy, have you ever been to Pearl Harbor in Hawaii?
Yes, a couple times, actually.
It's the same thing, I think, don't you think?
Yeah, it's eerie.
Same kind of eerie,
Very eerie.
Well, it's a cemetery. It's a cemetery.
It's fascinating, but I left Pearl Harbor, the Arizona Memorial.
Right.
Everything that you go through there, it's fascinating. It's very moving. It's such a tragic part of history. I left sad and depressed.
Yeah.
And I think I would feel the same way if I visited concentration camps or the beaches of Normandy.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Yeah, I went with a group to Pearl Harbor, and they actually, this tour group, they gave us cards of one of the men that that died that day. And you have a card with his picture on it as a serviceman and kind of his stats and where he was from and all that kind of thing. And it really made it very personal when you went on the boat.
Of course. Well, it was this day. Today's the anniversary day, and I assume that's why this Christopher Nolan movie is opening this week to coincide with that. Because really, it's a movie that seems like would open around Christmas time.
Right. Exactly. That's why I thought it was weird to open in July.
Oscar consideration. Yeah. It is going to be up for Oscar consideration. For Christopher Nolan, for his meticulous directing job that he did.
And he always does.
Who is the actor that plays Oppenheimer? He really looks like him.
Cillian Murphy.
Yeah, okay.
Cillian Murphy.
Did you talk to him?
I did.
I mean, they've got the hat and the mannerisms, the face.
Yeah, he looks just like him.
A lot of smokes. A lot of cigarettes. I can't answer that question until I light my cigarette.
What does Robert Downey do in that film?
Robert Downey is, I forget the name of the character, but he is the government official who is in charge of this new atomic project.
The Manhattan
Which is being developed. He's phenomenal. Cillian Murphy's going to be nominated. Robert Downey's going to be nominated. It's an amazing performance. Matt Damon is in the film as the general who was overseeing the project along with Oppenheimer. And Emily Blunt is also in the movie, who's amazing. And she plays the wife or girlfriend. I wasn't 100% sure
of Oppenheimer.
Of the official relationship between Oppenheimer and her. But it's a beautiful movie. You'll hear Christopher Nolan. He'll be on the show with us a little bit later on to talk about it. Next week, I'll have my interviews with Cillian Murphy, plays Robert Oppenheimer, with Matt Damon, and with Emily Blunt. All right here. Coming up, we'll get into our weekend theater segment. The annual Dance for Life benefit is going to be taking place in a couple of weeks. This is the event that I hosted for the first 20 years of its existence. It's a benefit performance in which dance companies from all over Chicago, all perform for free. They donate their services, and they all appear on one stage in one night. And this year it's going to be August 19th at the Auditorium Theater. We'll talk more about which dance companies are included. And the nice thing about it is it's an incredible night of entertainment. And it's a great benefit to help dancers who are in need of health care. So we'll get into that a little bit later on. That's something that you, Elton Jim, have not explored. You're a Jefferson Award nominated thespian now.
Right, but I'm not an equity actor. I'm non-equity, so I'm not in the union.
But you could still dance on stage.
Oh, I have danced.
You have?
Oh yeah, I've been.
How have I not known this?
I was in Young Frankenstein. I was in the Buddy Holly story. I've been in a couple of musicals.
Really?
Oh yeah. Not very good, but I know how to dance, but I don't know how to do choreography kind of dance. I mean, I remember when they were in the first rehearsal for Young Frankenstein, and they're like, the choreographer's like, so then we'll do a two-step, you know, they're all this lingo.
Dance lingo.
Yeah, and I'm like, and all these other people that are trained dancers, they pick it up in 2 seconds.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wait, what? I basically said, look, I could do this as a joke.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how to do it because I don't, and I'll make it fun.
Yeah.
But if you want somebody to dance, put me in the back.
An actual dancer, right? Yeah. In my 20 years of hosting Dance for Life, which was a joy, a couple of times they said it would be really funny if we got you involved in it. I said, same thing.
Yeah.
Like, at a wedding, I'll get up and dance.
I love to dance.
But, for what they wanted to do, like swing dancing and,
right, and all
choreographed,
these...
I said, think Jackie Gleason doing...
Right.
Funny dance moves.
That's what I do.
That'll be me on the dance floor.
That's my move.
And unfortunately, some of it has been recorded. I think that I've confiscated most of the copies of the tapes.
I have nothing but respect for dancers like that because
it's amazing.
It is. Yeah. And like I said, they don't even know what they're doing. The choreographer comes out and says, we're going to do it. Okay, let's do it. And I'm like, whoa. They don't even do it one time.
They just know what the deal is. Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Well, we're going to talk to the executive producer of Dance for Life just to give us the all the details on the event itself. It's a fantastic evening of entertainment if you love dance. But also the choreographer who has done the grand finale for this show, I'm pretty sure since the beginning of Dance for Life, maybe like 30 years ago, Randy Duncan, he's a world-renowned choreographer. He's coming up to join us as well. 10:36, Dean Richards, Sunday morning.
That's Gene Kelly, right?
That's Gene Kelly. 1952.
American in Paris, right?
American in Paris. I could listen to this all day long.
He was so athletic.
So great.
My gosh. So when you watch the stuff that he did...
You don't want to see the athleticism of dancers. The show, Dance for Life... is for you, as I mentioned a few minutes ago. I hosted the show for the first 20 years of its existence. It started off as an AIDS fundraiser to help dancers who were affected by HIV and AIDS but had no insurance try to live back in the early days, literally just try to live. It has now evolved into a health fund for dancers who are living with a variety of ailments. This show, Dance for Life, is amazing. But I would, I would introduce each of the acts, and Tubby is standing backstage, watching these dancers stretching and limbering up and getting ready to go on stage and perform flawlessly.
You can do jazz hands, can't you?
I can do jazz hands, but jazz pretty much any other part of my body is. There's a lot of work that goes into something like that. It's amazing. I mean, you think about the kind of athleticism that a football player might need, or basketball player, or any athlete, really. And I would argue that a dancer goes through just as much physical stress and endurance and training as anybody else does.
Without a doubt.
It's part of why it's so great to see this performance, Dance for Life, which I'd mentioned to you is this year will be August 19th at the Auditorium Theater. Several different dance companies all donate their time and appear on the same stage in the same night. They each do, you know, a number or two. And then the next performer comes in, the next dance troupe comes out. Joining us online to talk about it is the executive director of Dance for Life, Nathaniel Ekman. Nathaniel, welcome to the show, and great to have you on with us today. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
If you'd like me to come on and recreate this Gene Kelly number, got to dance, you know, as a big opening number, something like that.
I see you with an umbrella and a light
like post. A singing in the rain kind of deal.
Yeah, I see you doing that.
Well, back in the old days, we did this show at the Skyline stage on Navy Pier, so it would have made a lot of sense. Now it's at the auditorium. Talk to me a little bit about what Dance for Life is about. As I had mentioned, a fantastic night of entertainment, but also a great cause, right?
Right, yes. Dance for Life is a great event and a great night. It is the primary fundraiser for Chicago Dancers United, and Chicago Dancers United administers the Dancers Fund, which makes grants to dance professionals in Greater Chicago, as you said, for a variety of health and wellness conditions.
And who will be actually performing this year?
We are joined by 10 of Chicago's premier dance companies and freelancers.
Wow.
Yeah, we have Boomcrack Dance Company. We have Chicago Tap All-Stars. Together are Giordano Dance Chicago and South Chicago Dance Theater for one of the pieces.
Giordano Dance has been one of the originals in Dance for Life, I think, since the very beginning when we used to do the show over at the old Organic Theater. On the north side when it first started. But they're originals, along with Joffrey Ballet and Hubbard Street. I mean, there are some people who have been with this event since the beginning.
That's true. And we also have Joffrey Ballet returning to perform Gerald Arpino's Birthday Variations. We have freelance dancers Joseph Massarelli and Riho Sakamoto. We also have Moonwater Dance Project, Moontu Dance Theater, Kiplay Ballerinas, which merges classical ballet with hip-hop, Hubbard Street Dance, as you mentioned, and this year's finale piece is by Randy Duncan. It revives and expands his world premiere finale from Dance for Life 2021, entitled As One.
Okay, yeah, Randy's going to join us in a few minutes, but Randy has been one of the originals on Dance for Life as well, one of the original choreographers on the show. And I think he's always done the grand finale for the show as well. So, you know, usually back in the old days, we had six or seven dance companies, but you've upped it this year and are adding even more so. It should be a pretty spectacular night of music and dance. Talk to me a little bit about the evening itself, because there is the performance, but there is more to it than that, right?
There is more to it. There's the performance at 6 p.m. at the Auditorium Theater, and it is followed by the after party at Venue 610. We have tickets at four price points, and the highest of those entitles the guests to the performance with the best seats available and the after party. After party starts at 8 o'clock.
Okay, so how do people get tickets for Dance for Life? How can people join us that night?
People who want to attend Dance for Life can visit the Auditorium Theater website. They can also call the box office of the auditorium at 312-341-2300. On the ChicagoDancersUnited.org webpage, we link to these resources so people can check out the show there as well.
Great. Okay, so it's August 19th, 6 p.m. for the performance itself. You want to get more info, go to the Auditorium Theater's website. And remember, it's not only these 10 dance companies, 10 of the best dance companies in Chicago, all performing on the same stage, same night, but you're also helping out the Dancers Fund, which it provides financial support for dancers for healthcare and medical needs. So it's a great cause as well. Nathaniel, we appreciate you joining us, and we look forward to seeing you on the night of the 19th.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for joining us. In a minute, we'll talk with world-renowned choreographer Randy Duncan. Correction, I thought this was Gotta Dance, Gene Kelly, was from An American in Paris. It's from Singing in the Rain.
Oh.
Yeah, Singing in the Rain. So thank you for the corrections on that.
Wow.
Both great movies. And either way, I'm going to recreate the performance. If not a dance for life, look for me to be doing a big entrance at Tree Time when we do our...
We should do like a flash mob.
A big dance number?
Yeah, we should get a choreographer and we should all do it.
I'm all for things that don't make one bit of sense on the radio.
Well, that fits right in.
That's which is pretty much the show. 10:44, we'll come right back. Talking dance this morning on our weekly theater segment. Dean Richards Sunday morning, 720 WGN, 10:47. Talking about the annual dance fundraiser, Dance for Life, which will be August 19th this year at the beautiful and historic Auditorium Theater, where 10 dance companies, 10 of the very best dance companies, all will perform on the same stage the same night, and all wrapped up in a big bow by the world-renowned choreographer Randy Duncan, who has worked this show pretty much since the beginning. I know, back when I started hosting Dance for Life, when it started 32 years ago. I can't believe that. I just saw it in the press release. I was like, wow, I'm old.
Every story you tell now is 30 years old.
Well,
not anyone. It's like any of my friends, when we said any story we tell starts at 30 years ago.
Well, and I always think, do I sound like my parents talking about Fibber, McGee, and Molly?
Exactly, you do.
You know, when we were little, and we were like, I don't have no idea what you're talking about. And I'm sure that's how we all sound now to the youngsters. But it was a group of young people from the dance community that started this show, and they called me and invited me to host it, and I was honored to be part of this great event. As I say, it started as an AIDS fundraiser and has evolved now into much more than that, but I was glad to be part of the team that started all of this, and that included choreographer Randy Duncan, my longtime pal. Welcome to the show, Randy. How you doing there, my friend?
Hey, my handsome friend. I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Nice to see you. Not nice to talk to you. Did you do our first Dance for Life show? I mean, you've been there since the very beginning, right?
Well, the company that I was the artistic director of, Joseph Holmes Chicago Dance Theater, which is disbanded since that time, performed the very first one, and Keith Elliott, of course, was one of my dancers. So he started. Yeah. And then 2 years later, I started with the finale.
I gotcha. Okay. So you were involved with your dance company first, and then that evolved into you taking dancers from each of the companies and putting together this performance. A combined company performance of what is always a showstopper. It's been amazing, isn't it, really? I mean, the evolution of this project to help others has turned into one of the premier entertainment nights in Chicago, hasn't it?
Absolutely. It really has. I mean, with the likes of the Joffrey Ballet and Hubbard Street and Giordano, and they've been there since the beginning. It's just turned into something extraordinary, not to mention the support, the reason why we do it. So, it's really, really been great. And I've certainly had and continue to have a wonderful time working with these dancers.
Yeah. We have to acknowledge, you mentioned Keith Elliott, who is, one of the founders of all of this. We have to mention Harriet Ross,
absolutely,
who was one of the founders. Danny Copelson, all of us old timers who were there back in the beginning, back at the old Organic Theater that's not even there anymore. It's an apartment building now where the original theater was, And
that's right.
The show, you know, it was in several different theaters. And for many years out at the Skyline Stage at Navy Pier.
Yes.
You know, so whatever the weather was, more often than not, incredibly humid, while these poor dancers are trying to stay hydrated, getting ready for the shows. But then, you know, then a ship's horn would go off. And but for the past several years at the auditorium, what do you have planned for this year?
This year we're going to restage. Well, I'm restaging the one we did during the pandemic, which was it's called As One, with music by Ira Antelis, one of my fantastic composers that I use from time to time, with costumes by Richard Dayhoff. So we did this at Millennium Park a couple of years ago when people were still wearing masks and so forth. So I decided, you know, to get it right, we're going to, it was, you know, greeted by a great ovation then, but this time we have control over lights and everything indoors. I even have more dancers aside for this particular piece.
I forgot about the COVID version. I was there at the Pritzker Pavilion.
That's right.
I saw that. Yeah. Everybody was wearing a mask, and while it was still, it was fun to be out with people and all that. Everybody was masked. We still, you know, had that like don't get too close to me kind of mentality that everybody had. So it'll be great to see this in the way that you probably originally intended.
Absolutely. What's funny about being at the Pritzker, because it gets dark much later during the summer, it's hard to see the lights during the day when we have to tech. You really can't see anything. You have to go on a wish and a prayer as far as that's concerned. Whereas at the Auditorium Theater, of course, we can control everything because it's indoors. We can control the birds and things as well.
Right. The outdoor shows sometimes did provide a few surprises along the way. Right. I was talking with Jim Toronto here, who's in studio with me, who is an actor on his own, in addition to many other things that I can't really mention on the air. The court order prohibits me from mentioning those things. But he is a performer himself, and we were talking about how rigorous the training is and the work that goes into being a dancer. You were quite the performer yourself all over the world. You have choreographed all over the world. Can you talk a little bit about the physical demands on a dancer being in, a performance?
Oh, my God. Well, first off, you know, you're taking class every day, meaning that you are at the bar doing some pliés and undos and stretches and whatnot to keep your body in shape and well-oiled and tuned, just like a Stradivarius, you know. So there is that, and then there is the time in which you use to rehearse the things that you're going to do, and there's a lot of lifting. You don't need to go to the gym because you've got all this stuff going on as far as a dancer is concerned in the studio itself, making yourself stronger and dealing with where the story is coming from and all of that. So, I mean, there's so much to that is entailed when you are a dancer and a performer, as far as a dance performer is concerned.
I was talking about how the training that a dancer goes through is similar to what an athlete goes through. A couple of people on our text line this morning are saying, how could I possibly compare a dancer to a Chicago Bear, you know, being out on the gridiron? I stand by my statement. I think that it's, as I've seen these dancers in their training, I've seen what goes into this. You know, it's a different kind of physicality, but wouldn't you say that it's very similar to what an athlete goes through?
It goes far beyond even what some of the athletes go through, because we're always working on perfecting the littlest of things to make it appear on stage as if it's all magical. And the only way to do that is to train your body in a way that is going to change your body. So it's very, very similar to the athletes, but I would say going beyond that. Because after you've trained your body, then you got a story to tell.
Right, right. Yeah. Well, Elton, explain what you were talking about when you were in Young Frankenstein.
Yeah, well, I've been in a couple of musicals. I do more dramatic or straight plays, but I've done and even at the audition, phase, it's always been so interesting that the choreographer will tell everybody, okay, we're going to do a da 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 da. You know, you have your own language.
Yeah,
and everybody just says, "We're going to do this," and then after that, and the people that are trained dancers, and I'm not one of them, they just catch. You don't even redo. You don't even practice it. You just sort of tell them the order. It could be 7 or 8 different moves, and they just boom. It's incredible. They never did it before. They never did this this sequence, and you just bark it out, and they do it.
Oh, yeah, that's the idea. That's all behind the training and the vocabulary that you learn as a dancer. You know, chasse, pas de bourrée, double tour, you know.
I thought those were menu items. I said, yeah, I'll have a bowl of that.
Oh, <yeah. laughs> And in some cases, that's what it sounds like.
But yeah, no, I mean, I have nothing but respect. Absolutely. Because not only did you, like you said, the training and the toning, but then just the ability to do that,
put it all together. You know what I always think is, how do they remember all this?
I know.
How do they remember all the steps? But they do, and that's the beauty of the art.
Well, that's why they're pros.
Dance for Life 2023 is Saturday, August the 19th, 6 p.m. at the Auditorium Theater, downtown Chicago. And you can get tickets by going to auditoriumtheater.org. Randy, I'll be there at the show this year, and I'm looking forward to seeing my longtime pal. It's great to talk to you.
I'm looking forward to seeing you.
I think Schwani was going to
stay hydrated on a show like this. I could cramp up at any moment.
You ever get those
leg cramps?
Those calf cramps in the middle of the night? God. What the heck is that?
Do you have to jump out of bed and straighten your leg?
Welcome to old guys talking about aches and pains.
But isn't that crazy? It's just so... It just...
Yeah,
it totally
extremely painful.
Tenses up.
Extremely painful. I want to just take a moment to thank. We have the most wonderful listeners, Schwani.
Best in the world.
Andy, don't you think we have?
We definitely do.
We heard such nice comments. People are so nice. I get emails all the time of people saying how much they enjoy. They look forward to Sunday morning and us goofing around and having some fun and providing some laughs. You probably get some, I would imagine.
Yeah, right? People, stop me on the street. No, I was kidding. I've gotten some comments.
Aren't you the guy with the hernia?
Thanks for the update on your hernia, man.
our new...
Let me show you my scar.
Yeah,
yeah. We decided that we're going to start doing a feature on the show where we answer medical questions, even though we have no knowledge
from
whatsoever.
From Dr. Howard, Dr. Fine, and Dr. Howard.
Well, somebody sent a text in suggesting a name for this feature, Everything But Dr. Most. And then Elton Jim came up with...
Questions for the Quacks.
Yeah.
Oh, I like
that. That's perfect. Questions for the quacks.
Questions for the quacks.
How about perfect. Questions for Dr. Least?
Dr. Least, Dr. Least, and Dr. Least.
Exactly.
Dr. Least, Dr. Less, and Dr. More.
Lesser, yeah. Less, lesser, less.
We just get such nice feedback, and we really appreciate it. But maybe none has summed it up better than the 708 area code, saying that I love the show, and I have to say, I love you guys. You're so stupid in a good way. But when Elton Jim is on the show,
the stupidity level,
it raises up.
So. Raises or lowers?
No, well, yeah, depends on your perspective, on, right, I guess.
Next week, the ingrown toenail.
That's thank you for listening to a stupid but in a good way show. If I didn't have Mr. Chatterbox here talking to me when I should be paying attention.
It's my fault.
I blame the whole thing on you. Yeah. But had you heard this as planned, it would have just slid right into this. I love you. Text in, will Elton John, Elton Jim ever be quiet? You should hear him during the breaks. Dean Richards, Sunday morning, WGN, Schwani and Andy, and Elton Jim is here, fresh back from Stockholm, Sweden.
Beautiful city. You ever been there?
We went to see the final Elton John concert. I have never been there, no.
Stockholm is, we were there several years ago as part of a cruise, and so I remembered a little of it, but it is just a gorgeous city. Very beautiful. I didn't know it. It's comprised of like 14 islands.
That is correct.
So there are all little water tributaries in between all the land. So you go on a little boat and you go through. They have a beautiful amusement park that's right off the water there.
Nice, yeah.
It's gorgeous.
Never been to anything Sweden. Been to Andersonville. Went to the Swedish bakery a couple of times.
The McDonald's there has McHerring, which is nice.
That's nice. That's nice.
That's very good. Good Swedish. I had some Swedish meatballs, and they really were good.
Was it as good as IKEA?
Well, not as that. I mean, they weren't as good as that.
The reason that I'm playing a little cheap trick.
Yeah, why are you playing a cheap trick?
It's their finale appearance in the Chicago area tonight.
What?
At the Metro.
What do you
I'll
mean?
Be there.
Oh, you going?
I'm going.
Nice.
Get Andy, Mr. Concert Goer these days.
What do you mean it's their finale? What do you mean? They're not touring anymore?
No.
Wow, I didn't know they were quitting. Wow.
How many of their shows have you been to?
About 7. I love Cheap Trick.
Yeah.
I interviewed Rick Nielsen a couple of times here at WGN.
He's a good guy.
Yeah, I love them.
Good guy, great band. Rock and Roll Hall of Famers.
Yeah.
At the Metro for tonight, not a huge venue. I would guess it's sold out. But
it's got to be.
If you're interested, take a look at their website and see if tickets are still available for that show.
Are they playing a full album, Andy, or are they just doing a show?
Yeah, I don't know the details. A friend of mine got the tickets and said, hey, do you want to go? I'm like, yes, I do.
Oh, nice.
Because I haven't seen them before. So.
Oh, yeah, they're great. I mean, several about 20, 30, year, 25 years ago, they did a string of shows. They always play the Metro. And they did the full albums of back in their career.
Huh.
And I went to like 2 or 3 of those. They did like, you know, the classic, Heaven Tonight album and their In Color album and stuff. And even, what's his name? Billy Corgan showed up.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was very cool.
He's a fan, Billy.
So you're going to have a great, you're going to have a great time tonight.
Also going on today, the final night of Windy City Smokeout, which is this big country.
Oh, the country music.
Country music festival that's been going on. In the parking lot, basically, of the United Center.
Yeah.
Zach Brown was there, Darius Rucker, Luke Bryan was there last night, and it's the Zach Brown Band playing there tonight. They have great music, tons of barbecue. I haven't been over in that neighborhood while this has been going on, but I have to think it's the best-smelling neighborhood in Chicago.
Well, if it's in the parking lot, then where do you park?
There's other places to park.
I'm just saying.
Around there. There's other parking lots and
the red
new invention called parking on the street.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying it's they're in a parking lot. So
yeah, there's places to park there. Sundays on State Street is beginning again today. where they have free music right downtown on State Street, so you can check that out. And also, last night I was at the St. Halalobos Greek Orthodox Church.
Sure you were.
Big Greek fest.
Oh,
that's going on. This is one of the best. The Greek churches in the Chicago area every summer put on a big, festivals with music and dancing and games for the kids.
I was home last night. I didn't do anything.
All that was right down the street from you. It's not that far.
You should. Didn't ask me.
I probably could have called you.
Where is it?
In Niles.
Oh, that's not that far.
Yeah. It's right on Caldwell.
Say that word again.
St. Haralobos.
How do you spell Haralobos? How do you spell that?
Haralobos. It is just north of Tui on Caldwell.
Oh.
And I had some of the best. This festival is famous for amazing food, Greek food. And if you're interested, they're open. They reopen again today at 3 o'clock, and they go, I think, until 10 or midnight or something. But it's always so much fun, the Greek dancing, just everything. So get out there and have some fun.
What'd you eat?
I had pork souvlaki, which is like a pork shish kebab.
Nice.
Greek salad, spanakopita.
Of course.
Spinach pie.
You got to have that.
And then the treat of the night is a dessert that's called loukoumades. It's a fried dough ball, basically, that they drench in honey and walnuts.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it's delicious.
And so it's fried.
Right.
Then dipped in honey.
Dipped in honey.
And then rolled.
Rolled in walnuts.
Oh.
Chopped walnuts.
What's bad about that?
Nothing.
I haven't heard one bad thing. Yeah. Fried is always good. Yeah.
Ask my belt buckle. There's nothing wrong with any of them. My belt buckle.
How many hobalabalabas did you have?
I have a loukoumades, as I believe the word you're looking for. When you order them, you get like a big...
A
plate of them.
Oh.
So I probably had about 10 of them.
Oh, my God.
They're small. They're like little munchkin balls.
Oh, okay.
They're tiny.
Yeah, nice.
But I could have eaten another 10.
Where did they have the big gyro spits all everywhere?
They have a whole variety of different foods. I just happen to like their pork shish kebab, the souvlaki. But so if you're looking for some great food today, that's definitely something for you to take advantage of. I wanted to talk a little bit about the new movies that are opening this week, both from controversial actors. Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning, Part 1. People have a love-hate relationship with Tom Cruise. For a variety of reasons, a lot of people just don't like the guy, and they don't like him personally, and they don't like what he stands for. They don't like his religion. They don't like how he's his relationships that he has been in. I really try to separate the art from the artist. When I go to review a movie, I mean, some people have said, I gave it a Dean's List A. I like the movie. It's really great, Mission Impossible, the new Mission Impossible movie. People said, how dare I give it a Dean's List A? How dare I give it a good review? Don't you know about Tom Cruise and blah, 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 and he's done this and he's done that? Most of which are just things that people have read in the tabloids, number one. But the bigger issue for me is I'm not reviewing a movie based on his personal life. I'm reviewing the movie based on
the artistic,
what I see on the screen. So, you know, everybody, you can feel any way that you want to about him. I'm not telling you how to feel about him or what to think. And
hey, Da Vinci and Michelangelo weren't, they've had some interesting things in their backgrounds too.
Yeah. I'm not telling you what to think. Please don't tell me what to think. You know, we can all have our own opinions and, you know, and move on our happy ways. The other movie, is called The Sound of Freedom that stars Jim Caviezel, who played Jesus in the very gruesome Passion of the Christ.
Right.
But he is widely known for ultra-right views. Some say that he's tied with QAnon. There are a whole variety of things that people, since I also give that movie a good review, people are telling me, how can I possibly give a movie like that a good review? Don't you know about Jim Caviezel? Don't you know about the QAnon, blah, 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 this and that? And again, I review the movie based on what I see on the screen. And this movie, Sound of Freedom, is about the rampant child sex trafficking, which is going on all over the world. It's a horribly disgusting, out of control problem. And if I found this movie very eye opening. It's not an easy movie to watch. It's not easy to watch children being abducted by creeps and perverts, and see how, you know, where the, it's not overly graphic, but it's more than implied what's happening to these kids once they are abducted. And it's a little bit disgusting. But I've found this, and it's a hard movie to watch, as I said, but it's one that I think is useful for everybody to watch. Yeah. So you understand it better, especially if you have kids. So you're watching your kids like hawks and keeping them safe. I gave that also a good review. But some people, I took a beating on social media for my positive reviews of both of these movies and these two controversial actors.
But at the same time, look at
How dare I give a good review to a movie from either of these two people? And I'm not reviewing their personal lives. That's not what this is about. My job is to go see a movie and tell you what I think about the movie. Don't you know who's backing this movie? Well, I don't know who's backing Transformers or, you know, a lot of the movies. I don't know where the money's coming from for a lot of these big movies. That's not what I'm reviewing. I'm reviewing the movie. So, you know, it's been interesting. It's been an interesting back and forth. You know, like so many things on the internet, a lot of it is just completely loony and out of control. And why I hate social media, because people can just say or do whatever they want in the most disgusting, rude, and horrific fashions, and there is zero consequence. That's, you know, on the internet, people can throw digital Molotov cocktails, and there's no consequence whatsoever. Why I hate it. There have been some recent comments saying, I respect that, you know, your review and this and that. I won't go see it because I don't like this and that. That's perfectly reasonable to me. But some of the nasty, horrible, nasty personal comments are just why I hate the internet.
And they're personal attacks at you.
Yeah. Yeah, for having the nerve to, how dare I say anything positive?
Well, somebody likes Tom Cruise movies because basically Tom Cruise is responsible for the comeback of the entire Hollywood movie business in the last year and a half between Maverick and now I would assume this.
Yeah. Well, right now, the Mission Impossible movie is taken in over $56 million for the weekend so far. It's going to wind up probably somewhere closer to $60 million by the time all the counting is done. And this Sound of Freedom movie, it's an independent movie. I hadn't really even heard about it. There's been no promotion on this movie. Normally, movie studios are sending me emails and calling me and contacting me and don't forget to mention our movie and don't you want to interview the star of the movie and don't you want this and don't you want this? Sound of Freedom did none of that. They had zero promotion. This is a word-of-mouth movie. And it's doing phenomenally well at the box office. Not that that makes it right or wrong, but this movie is resonating with people, and I think it's because it's about a topic which is so important, protecting your children. That's really what this movie is about. You know, Caviezel, his connections, the backers, whatever, none of that's in the movie. None of his political views are in the movie. None of that. This is a movie about a guy who is a former Homeland Security agent who has had it with children being abducted and taken advantage of, and he goes on a one-man crusade to save children. Got a problem with that topic? You think that children should be abducted and abused? Then there's a greater problem that you should be thinking about. I personally find that sickening and disgusting. Anyone who would harm a child, I don't even have words strong enough for how disgusting I think that is and wrong I think that is. And that's what this movie is about. So So get off my back on social media.
Hey, you, get off my cloud. How about this this actor and writer strike now? I mean, how is that going to affect the upcoming season of films or the next year?
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, who knows? Simon Pegg, who is in the Mission Impossible, the new Mission Impossible movie, was at our TV morning show this week, the day before the strike happened. And I asked him, you know, what was going to happen. He goes, we're working on the next Mission Impossible movie right now.
Because this is a part one, you said,
this
right?
This is a part one.
Does it end with a cliffhanger?
It ends, the movie is self-contained. So it's not one of these abrupt endings to be continued, which I hate.
Yeah,
but it does. It concludes itself, and if you
didn't,
you know that there's more coming.
I see,
but you don't feel like you just cut it off at the best part.
Yeah,
but he said that they're working on the new one right now, and that if the strike happens, they're closing. They have to shut down. All the movies have shut down. Everything is shut down. Interviews have shut down. Red carpets have shut down.
A lot of the actors went to the red carpets to the beginning, but then they left before the movies were shown. Like, they left they did the interviews to promote it, and then they left.
They split.
Yeah.
Yeah, they split once the strike was announced.
Yeah.
They waited until the strike was announced. So who knows what kind of view, you know, that's going to be coming up with. All I know is that... on the TV morning show, and probably here on the radio as well, we're not doing any new interviews until the strike is resolved.
No.
So I'll be going back into the vault and, you know, finding some 1980s interviews that
I did. Few more cooking segments on the morning show.
I hope you like interviews with Carrot Top, because I
Paulie Shore.
Have a few of those coming up soon. The whole Sunday morning crew and Elton Jim Toronto here today. As he says when he fills in for others here on the station, listen anyway.
But listen anyway.
Yeah.
Elton Jim's here, but listen anyway.
And I got to say, people are taking their nice pills today. We've had like very nice comments about you today, which is really unusual.
Well, which is, I mean, I'm a nice guy.
You are.
I don't understand, you know.
Yeah, you are.
So they're finally coming around. It's only taken 10 years.
Yeah. we're going to get to our interview with director Christopher Nolan in a couple of minutes.
Is this from Inception?
This is from... I know you're going to see a lot of interviews from me from back in the day. I've got my big interview with Lainey Kazan coming up.
You and Sid Charisse... I never heard her talk.
Chemistry.
Oh, my God. She said things I never thought she'd ever reveal.
Right. You have to ignore that we're talking about her appearance at Mr. Kelly's. But
at the Saber Room.
Saber Room on 95th Street. We're probably going to dig into our archives for some.
But
the old interviews because of the strike. But
when you say old, though, what do you mean by old? Like years old?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm going to go back into the vault.
Oh, wow.
I'll show you my first celebrity TV interview that I did. One Mr. George Clooney.
George? For what?
For the movie Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Wow. That was your first?
That was my first, they're called junket interviews.
Yeah.
Where I went to New York and I interviewed the Coen brothers who directed that movie, and who else was in it? I can't remember. Yeah. But anyway, George, I sat down with the young George.
So that was the first?
Young Dean sat down with young George.
Now, that movie doesn't seem that long ago.
It's like 25 years ago.
That's how long you've been at Channel 9?
I've been there longer than that, but that's when I started doing these junket interviews in New York and L.A.
Yeah. Wow.
All that. So, we're going to dig into the vault for some of those old classic interviews. But as I said, the studios, literally, the past few weeks have been... shipping us all over the place to do interviews, to get all these interviews done before the strike was about to happen, and now it has, and everything's shut down. So we have some interviews to last us for a while.
So do you have enough to last us the summer season, through August or no?
Yeah, through August.
Well, so that's, so they pretty much, at least they will cover that.
I think the strike's going to go much longer.
Than you do?
I do. Yeah. Wow. The writers and actors strike, I think, will linger for a while.
So then what will movies do if they're going to come out in the fall? They'll just, there'll be no promotion.
Well, a lot of the movies are already done.
No, but I mean, in terms of when they're marketed, you know, now when they come to the theater.
For this year, they'll still come to the theater at the same time.
My point is they won't have any interviews.
No, there won't be interviews.
That's my point, the marketing part of it.
There will not be interviews for those.
Wow.
Nope.
Now, here's a question that I have for you, since you're Mr. Film.
Query away.
You just said that that Mission Impossible 2 is probably going to do about $60 million.
Right.
Now, from what I read a couple of weeks ago, the Indiana Jones film did $60 million.
Right.
That was considered a huge flop.
No, absolutely not.
That's what I was reading, that they were disappointed and that this was a flop.
I don't think that Harrison Ford, Indiana Jones, was considered a complete flop. It may have underperformed what their expectations were, but I don't think complete flop.
Because what is now, given the way the theater business is being affected by COVID, what, you know, before it was the $100 million weekend.
Depends on the movie. Depends on
but
the budget.
But can a movie make $100 million anymore?
Sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. But we're not getting as many as we used to.
Maybe not in the first week.
But they used to. My point is, in the summer.
It depends on the movie. It depends on the movie. But absolutely, the dynamics are different now than they were before the pandemic. Definitely, people are still not going to the theaters as much as they used to. It's gotten better, but it's still not quite the same.
I'm just wondering, has the threshold been lowered now?
The threshold is lowered because they know that
they're not going to get.
People are still a little bit skittish. I mean, people got very used to watching things at home.
Yeah.
So I think that's part of the dynamic now. So, you know, we'll see. They'll perform the way that they perform. Lots of interesting comments about what I was talking about of the feedback that I received this week about giving Tom Cruise a positive review. A very polarizing figure to a lot of people. I get it. You know, I feel like you have your own opinion about Tom Cruise. I know when I go to review a movie, I'm reviewing what I see on the screen. Same thing with this movie, The Sound of Freedom, starring Jim Caviezel, also a very polarizing figure. I review what I see on the screen, and I happen to like both of these movies. This movie, Sound of Freedom, which is essentially an independent movie that is like the number two movie. I think it's going to wind up being the number two movie of the weekend. It's doing phenomenally well at the box office, despite zero promotion for this film. The amount of money that a movie takes in doesn't dictate the quality, in my opinion. It does show what people are interested in, what they're not interested in. But, I reviewed these movies and gave my opinion of them before they opened. So my reviews have nothing to do with their box office performance. But that said, these movies are doing very well. Some of the feedback on this include, here's somebody that saw the movie saying it's... For people who say it's just a movie, it's not. It's totally real and very, very scary and heartbreaking because it's a movie about child sex trafficking. It's disgusting to watch it. It's heartbreaking. It's hard to watch. Watching kids getting harmed, it's about the worst thing in the world that I can think of right now. And that's what this movie is about. But I'm reviewing what I see on the screen. It happens to be about what I think is a very serious subject. Here is another saying, Dean, political views aside, you gave the new John Wick movie a B- and said you've had enough of the shooting, and now you give Mission Impossible an A. Two completely different movies. The John Wick movie is nothing but gun violence. That's the John Wick movie. There is much more to the Mission Impossible movie. And, whoever wrote this text, I don't know if you've seen, I'm guessing that you haven't seen the Mission Impossible movie, or you would know these are two completely different kinds of movies. There is much more plot to the Mission Impossible movie. There's humor to it. There are stunts. There are things. There's much more than a man pulling a gun out of his boot, out of his pocket, out of his shoulder strap, whatever, and shooting people. And that's what John Wick 4 is. You know, you can love it if you want to. Again, I'm not telling anybody what to like. And don't tell me what to like. I'll have my opinion and you have your opinion. And you know, let's try to be civil and respect that. But to that point, though, completely different kind of movie. Here is one that says, Dean, I'm glad you revisited The Sound of Freedom. Revisited because I didn't see it last week because I was on vacation, so I didn't see it. But it says, even with folks not going to see the movie because of the actor or QAnon endorsing it, it's, you know, we should still have respect for other people's opinions. Apparently, I don't know. I don't know very much about QAnon, but apparently they endorsed this movie. Should I hate a movie because somebody else that I may or may not agree with? I don't agree with QAnon in this particular case. Should I hate a movie because they liked it? I'm judging the movie based on what I see. If somebody that I don't like sees it and also likes it, should I hate it for that reason? I don't think so. I think the answer there is no. You like when I go on these rants a little bit, don't you?
Well, you definitely. I mean, there you are standing up. I mean, I when you brought this soapbox into the studio, I wasn't sure what you were going to do with it. But now I see you are standing up, upward, you know, upright on it. No, I think, that's an important qualification of you to say that, because you are doing this. And especially in today's world, because of the internet and social media, everybody has an opinion on everything. And everybody now knows more information about, like you were saying before, who funds this movie and all this other stuff. So it's important for people to understand that you are not taking the whole thing in all at once, but you're looking at it from as an artistic, creative project, aside from whatever this person may do in this film. If they're not espousing those views, then you should not be judging them on those views.
I think that, you know, some people on social media said that I'm not doing my job if I'm not considering all of the extra things.
I think you're doing your job.
But I think that require, if I did that, and I don't, if I did that, then that brings my political views into it, my morals into it, my judgment on things into it. I don't think that's what my job is.
You're supposed to go in objectively.
I'm supposed to tell you what this movie is about and whether I think this movie works. I don't think I should. I don't think it's my job to see this movie and tell you that I don't like it because I don't like one of the backers. That's more about me than about the movie, and that's, I think that's irrelevant. And that's part of this social media world that we're living in now, where people, and I'm here to tell you from the feedback that I've gotten, people want to bring their political views into everything.
Everything.
And that's, you're welcome to do whatever you want to do. I'm not here to tell you what to think. I'm telling you what I think. Yeah, you can be as nutty as you want to and think whatever you want to. God bless you. And don't tell me what to think. Because I know my job is to tell you what I think of what I see on the screen and nothing more.
Well, unfortunately, journalism and the media have become more personality and opinion-based, even in how the news, which supposedly should be objective, is reported. People go to those different news outlets that agree with their own political views to hear the news given in that way. So they expect anyone who has an opinion to be talking about it from their personal views
right.
instead of journalism is supposed to be objective.
Right.
It's supposed to be fact-based.
And I know that's
hard. And we've strayed from that.
That's hard to believe based on all the talking head shows
right.
that are out there and podcasts and where everybody feels like that we must know what your political views are on everything. But you know what? Mostly we don't care.
I'd love to know how Siskel and Ebert would have been able to work within this world.
I cannot even tell you how many times I have thought about what I knew Roger way more than I knew Gene. Gene passed away first.
Yeah.
I knew Roger pretty well. I think of what would Roger be thinking living in the social media world, and what would Roy Leonard think? How would Roy Leonard be dealing
with? Wow, yeah, yeah.
All of this.
It's so removed from their view yeah. of how they would look at a film or any kind of once again, creative project. Yeah.
Did I ever tell you what Roy told me that on his, he finished his last show. I was coming on next. And, you know, we gave a big hug. And congratulations. Right. And he said, I'm glad you're taking the helm and mm-hmm. you'll do great. And then he whispers in my ear, I'm so glad I don't have to deal with what you're going to have to deal with. He was prophetic in more ways than one. Quick break. And director Christopher Nolan talks about his new movie, Oppenheimer. It is 11:53 on WGN. Just a moment ago during this break, you know, we're right on Wacker Drive. A helicopter just flew by that, our window.
That was the freakiest thing I ever saw.
We're on the 18th floor.
And it was even with us.
It was even with us. It looked like this helicopter was coming through the window.
I mean, now, I mean.
That, and then it flew even lower.
Right.
Like close to the water, over by Navy Pier, over by the locks. And is it still?
And now it went up. It went up a little. But it was a red, it wasn't a traffic, I mean, it was a red helicopter.
It was a red helicopter.
That looked very 9/11-ish to me. That was very scary right now.
All right, Tom Cruise, I know you're out there somewhere.
That was probably him waving. Thanks for the good review. I saw somebody parachute out of it right there.
Jim and I were talking, and I was like, what the blank was that?
Oh, my God.
Like, flew by.
I mean, that was close to this building.
It was very close to the
window. Very
close
to the window. You could see inside.
Yeah. I almost got a beverage from the flight attendant that was on it. Man. All right. Well, we'll keep an eye out the window and see what's happening here. 11:55, time for our A-list interview of the week. Director Christopher Nolan has given us Memento, has given us Inception, Tenet. And, of course, the three remarkable Dark Knight movies, some of them made here in Chicago, right by WGN, I might add, where they kept all their helicopters and their vehicles, and we would see the Batmobile drive by.
It was on Lower Wacker.
WGN all the time. Well, by the TV station yeah. is where they housed everything, but yeah. they filmed it right by the radio station here downtown on Lower Wacker. His new movie is called Oppenheimer, which is the story of Robert Oppenheimer, who is known as the father of the atomic bomb. And that's what this movie is about, the development of the bomb, which, interestingly, today is the anniversary, July 16th, 1945, when they first tested the first atomic bomb. And we'll be talking much more about this movie. Christopher Nolan actually lived in Chicago when he was a young man, and knew a little bit about our TV station when I walked in the room to talk to him in New York.
WGN, Channel 9.
That's right. We still tell stories of how you used our parking lot for helicopters and vehicles and
oh wow,
and all the good old days. And I have to say, I did think about when you blew up half of Chicago for a dark night last night. It's like, oh, he's still blowing things up.
Still blowing things up.
Yeah, exactly. Talk to me about the making of this, because, I mean, the storytelling of this, the way that you tell the story is quite provocative and quite interesting. How do you approach telling this story, which is fairly well known, but to make it so visceral?
For me, the key to it was getting in his head, taking J. Robert Oppenheimer, who's an ambiguous figure. His story is full of paradox. It's full of tragedy and triumph. It's a mixture of ethical dilemmas and you know, a man who's at the very center of one of the biggest shifts in humankind's relationship with the universe, frankly. So how do you get into that? Well, to me, it's let's get in his head. Let's see things from his experience. The story is one we know the broad strokes of, but his personal relationship, his engagement with the Manhattan Project and everything that changed about our world. I was working from a book called American Prometheus by Kai Bird and Martin Sherwood. And early on in that book, you come to a passage that makes it clear that Los Alamos, which would become the birthplace of the atomic bomb and is still to this day a very important laboratory for defense and production of weapons, it was a place he liked to go camping with his brother. It was that personal to him. And he just said, if I could find a way to combine physics in New Mexico, my life would be complete. Getting into the story in the personal way, that to me was the way in.
Talk to me a little bit about the filmmaking itself.
Yeah.
And the explosion itself, that you did without CGI.
Mm.
How did you create that?
Well, we don't want to give away all the tricks.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to use CGI.
Why didn't you want to use it?
Well, the thing with the CGI is it's animation. It's incredibly versatile. It's a very powerful tool. But inherently, it tends to feel a bit safe, not that threatening. That's why it's tricky to use in horror films, things like that. And when it comes to the Trinity explosion, this is, for the people who witnessed it, it's one of the most beautiful and terrifying things simultaneously. And I challenged my visual effects supervisor and my special effects supervisor to say, okay, take CG off the table. How can we give this imagery the beauty, the sort of hypnotic beauty, but also the threat, the feeling of danger to it? And so we looked to real-world solutions. They found some very brilliant solutions, some of them very small, microscopic, things that stood in for larger things, and some of them very, very big and very explosive.
But also done with restraint and respect and dignity. I mean, it would have been very easy to make it a horrific moment, and you chose not to do that at all.
Well, what I'm trying to do, without giving away too much about the Trinity test itself, which is obviously the centerpiece of the film, and we knew it had to be a showstopper and you had to really involve people, but we really wanted to be in their heads as to how they were experiencing it. Mm-hmm. And the film is a film about consequences, and sometimes it's about the delay between the action and then the consequences that result. And so they're in a particular mindset. They're focused. These scientists and the military people, you know, Matt Damon as General Groves, Cillian Murphy as Oppenheimer, they're coming together with this massive team, and they work for years and spend billions of dollars, billions in 1945 dollars, for this one moment to see if they can make this thing work. And so there's an incredible focus in a very particular way. And that's where the beauty and the terror comes from in one set of images.
Yeah, it's amazing. Not only in the telling of Oppenheimer's story, but how it relates to the world today and all the things that they talked about then that we're still dealing with.
Thank you.
Christopher Nolan, the director of the new movie Oppenheimer, that will be opening in theaters everywhere this coming Friday during the week next week. I'll be talking with its stars, Cillian Murphy, Matt Damon, Emily Blunt, will share the story, and I'll tell you what I think of the movie, which is really rather startling. That's all coming up, and we'll get into our Food Time show in our next hour. Stick around. Hey, you want a little blast from the past?
Yeah.
You love blast from the past. 20 lives in the past. Oh,
wow. Music ended when the Beatles broke up.
Yeah.
20. That's 1970, Dave.
I know.
20 likes to sit in his room and play 45 RPM records and drink Tab.
RC.
Fresca.
RC
Fresca.
Cola.
Fresca.
Do they still make RC Cola?
Yeah, you know, today I parked in the building next door, and there's a the fire station there, and there's these little outdoor little tables, and there was a can of RC.
Really?
That's why I said RC. And even on the little logo on the can, it says, "My RC and me." Remember that used to be there?
My RC.
Me and my RC. Me and my RC. Yeah.
You know what the RC stands for, don't you?
Royal Crown.
Right, and you know who used to advertise for them?
What do you mean, Royal Crown? You
Royal
mean the whiskey?
Crown
Royal Cola. Crown Cola.
No. Yeah, no. No. What? Royal
Crown
Cola.
Oh, I'm thinking Crown Royal.
You're thinking Crown Royal.
I'm thinking Crown Royal.
Yeah, Crown Royal is the liquor.
And the spokesperson for Royal Crown Cola was Art Linkletter.
Of course he was.
Wow. Now that's, I even have to go Google that.
Who's Art Linkletter, Uncle Dean?
Art Linkletter.
You don't know who
Art
Linkletter
is? I remember him, but I mean, that's that's one that the average person might not know anymore.
Who's Art Linkletter, Uncle Dean?
You know, kids say the darndest things.
What was the name of his show?
When I was homesick from school back in the day, I would watch Art Linkletter's House Party.
That's House what Party. It was, the right? House Party.
Yeah.
Yep. Derwood Kirby and Alan Funt.
Well, he was on Candid
Camera. Candid Shows. All those guys.
But it would need to. I really don't want to get on this rabbit hole. I make fun of Schwanee, and then I
and then
get
you
sucked
go right
into
down.
It. I get sucked into it. But didn't he just talk to housewives? Like,
right.
Women would come to the show, oh, and yeah. they'd give that recipes. And then, how do you get a stain out of a shirt?
Yep.
And then it was kids say the darndest things.
Right. He would talk to kids and get them to say embarrassing things.
On a panel there. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And he made $1 zillion doing that.
Right. But he was the spokesperson for RC?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I remember seeing him on commercials. In fact, just a few weeks ago, I think I saw one.
I have to see if I can find. You mean like on YouTube or something?
Why, no. I was watching television at home. And
is your TV like in a time warp? He's been dead for 90 years.
He lives in the Twilight Zone. It's funny, he lives in the Twilight Zone.
There was a Twilight Zone where there was where a radio just picked up old radio shows.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
About a half an hour ago, I said, you want a blast from the past?
Yes.
And what is it? I ran into Kathy O'Malley yesterday.
Oh, okay.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was there? The girls? What were the, what was
girlfriends?
The girlfriends. Girlfriends. Yeah, right, the girlfriend.
Yeah. How can you forget?
Yeah.
Speak Your Piece, Sex Thursday. Classic WGN features.
Judy Markey and Kathy O'Malley.
Yeah. Kathy O'Malley, yeah.
But sadly, it was at a memorial for a mutual friend of ours who passed away. Yeah. Actually, a former producer here at WGN, Andy Perez. Was Roy Leonard's producer.
Oh, wow.
He was actually the very first producer that I worked with when I joined WGN.
Well, you're like Murphy Brown, so you go through more producers.
Well, I was.
And then
I was,
he blames it on me.
I was filling in for Roy Leonard. My first time on WGN was filling in for Roy Leonard. And Andy was the producer, Andy Perez. Was the producer of Roy's show, so he, you know, like kind of walked me through.
Right.
I had known him before that, so while, you know, it's my first time on WGN, I'm nervous as all get out. And he's, you know, talking in my ear, you know, saying unprofessional things and dirty things.
Oh,
and, you know, trying to make me laugh and loosen up and, know, all that. But Andy was a fantastic guy. Worked here at WGN for years. Decided to go into the public relations business and did that in Chicago for a while, and then moved out to Los Angeles to do the same kind of thing. And he passed away last March.
Hmm.
Young man. He was born in 1967. So
oh,
what would
goodness.
That make him?
56.
56 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow.
Young man passed away, and they had a lovely, his family organized a lovely memorial here in Chicago for Andy, and a lot of old friends were there. And I ran into Kathy O on the way out, and we had a nice chat, and it's good to catch up with old friends.
She was always very nice to me when I was on the afternoon show. She was always very complimentary.
Hmm.
She always reached out and said, oh, you know, she's always nice. Even though when we came here, we were viewed as the devil.
You and Gary.
Yeah.
Gary Ma.
That was a little scary.
Well, it was a little different for WGN.
Yeah, that was that first couple of months until they realized that we weren't here
to take
over.
You guys broke new ground for WGN.
But it was, I mean, there was time when we were walking down the hallways at the beginning. There was, if looks could kill,
Well, there was a lot of that for me too when I came here. I was an outsider.
But Kathy was always very nice. In.
Kathy was always very nice, and she, made the point. It's nice to catch up with old friends, and sadly, it's usually at funerals and wakes and memorials and things like that. So I guess that's just part of being our age. But shout out to Kathy O. To one of the girlfriends and a legend here on WGN for years. Get through this nice Sunday. It's clouded up just a tiny bit, but
it's gotten a little brighter than it was this morning.
But I think we're going to be okay. Dean Richards here with our regular Sunday crew, and a special visit from Elton Jim Toronto.
Always nice to be here, Dean.
Always nice to have you here.
I noticed you didn't use the correct adjective.
What do you mean?
Before my name.
What do you mean? Elton Jim Toronto.
Jeff nominated.
Oh, Jeff nominated. I did mention that earlier.
I know.
I mentioned that you were a...
I know, but you're supposed to say it every time.
Jefferson Award nominated thespian Jim Toronto, who's just back from Stockholm, Sweden. We talked about this at the beginning of the show, but I think worth revisiting. You were at Elton John's very final show
of his.
You would expect for Elton to be there for it, and your 214th Elton John show.
The last one was 215.
15.
Yeah.
And it was spectacular.
It was. It was very emotional, as you said before. It was, but it was funny when Elton first came when the tour started in 2018, and especially when he came to Chicago his first time as part of the tour. I remember he was very emotional, and when he would be talking about the fans, I remember the Chicago show, especially the first one at the United Center, I believe. He broke down. He stopped, and he put his head down. And he was very emotional, and that was happening a lot. And as the when the tour began,
during the tour, not just because he was in Chicago,
no, but just because
he went through rehab here, and I really, in many ways, was reborn.
Oh, he has he has a very tight connection. But the fans, he was beginning to feel the fans giving him that kind of last sense of appreciation and loyalty and love. And I think it was overpowering. What was interesting. Even in the last show, he gave a very heartwarming speech, but he did not break down. He did not weep. I was right at the lip of the stage. He did not tear up. Now, I don't know if he was fighting it, but it was interesting that he was much more emotional at the outset than he was at the end. And I'm just wondering that there is a part of him, as much as he loves performing, I think, during COVID, he was home for 2 years. He spent time with his family, which unexpectedly at that time.
Right.
And maybe he's got a taste and said, I really like this.
This isn't so bad.
Time because with family. If you think about it, for the last 52 years since 1970, when his career totally took off, he really has not had any kind of a break.
Right. Or any sense of
a family.
Normal life.
Exactly. And he was forced to here. Yeah. Yeah. And so it was interesting. I felt that.
What was your favorite part of the show? Because
it's the same show. Now, I said this initially, and I will still say, in terms of his performance, the way the song was performed and the entire production, they had this beautiful video representation. My favorite song of the night always was Someone Save My Life Tonight, because it was very emotional. It's a personal song to him. It's about how when he was 19, he was engaged to be married. And then one of his friends told him, you can't get married to this woman. You can't do this.
Right.
And so it was a very personal lyric. And so he really just sang the hell out of it. There's a line in there where he says, thank God my music's still alive.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that was always a very emotional. And the crowd really reacted into it. I always
think that there are probably a lot of diehards like you, though, in that final show, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, there were
it
people.
It wasn't just an average show.
Believe me, everybody says how I'm the biggest. There is no such thing as the greatest Elton John fan, because there's no such thing, because there are many, many, and I have met many, many of them. At that show in Stockholm, there were people from Australia. Hmm. There were people from Dubai. There were people from England. There were people from all around the United States. There was a woman from Poland. There are a lot of people that share that kind of, I don't know, I mean, he's been around for a long time, but I think his music is such that it, you know, and his personality is philanthropy. He just has bred and inspired a such a loyal following.
Right.
I mean, once again, there were people that were there not only for the Stockholm show, they started in Paris a week and a half, 2 weeks before, and went to Paris and Zurich,
followed it,
and Copenhagen.
They wanted to.
I was the goofball who flew back home and then got on a plane 4 days later to go back.
Wow!
Because I
dedicated.
Was going.
I don't understand it. Honestly, I think it's a little nuts, but.
Well, but, why? Well, here's the question.
But God bless you for
but,
it.
But why? What's
you,
that?
It's something that you enjoy, that you love. Who am I to say?
Yeah, and I'm not going to defend it. But my question is, what's the difference between that and somebody who's been a 50-year Bears season ticket holder? What's the difference?
Well, each game, if they've gone to 214 games, and I imagine there are plenty of people who have gone to every game for the last 50 years, but it's a different game every time.
And sometimes those games are terrible, and they're a waste of your time. At least I know that I'm going to see a great show for 2 hours and 40 minutes.
All right.
No, I'm not, and I'm defending it, but everybody says, oh.
I still think it's nuts.
Well, you know.
I hear what you're saying, but
you know, I just
can't think of, I've said this to you many times before. Yeah. I can't think of anything I like that much.
I am very, when I find something that I like, I am loyal. I've bought the same brand of car for the last 32 years. Hmm. I have the same.
I can see you have the same clothes for the last
same
32
clothes,
years.
Same handyman. I've been married for 32 years. When I find something that I like, I go to the same restaurants.
Yeah.
When I have handyman, as I said, call the guy.
Yeah.
When I find something, that has nothing to do with
kids
it.
Kids, get off my lawn.
No. Oh, I can't stand when they're on my lawn. No, I'm just. No, but I mean, so I've always been very loyal to things, and so this has been a huge part of my life.
What are you going
to
do now?
Well, that's a good question. Save a lot of money, first of all,
right?
It's going to be interesting. I mean,
you don't have a desire to follow somebody else?
Well, I'm a big Springsteen fan. I've seen him 60 times, but I've seen him throughout the country. I haven't seen him outside the country. I saw him in Milwaukee. I don't have tickets to see him at Wrigley Field yet.
Yeah, Wrigley.
So I'm wondering whether I'm going to go or not.
Yeah,
but
well, it's very interesting, and it's been
just so cool. Because
I just think it's so fascinating. I've seen your memorabilia. You are completely and totally dedicated to him, and in many ways, I love that somebody is so into something like that, because I can't think of, seriously, I really cannot. I like a lot of things. I can't think of anything I like that I would go see at 214.
And don't forget, this music was what, you know, we always cling to the music that we grew up with.
I guess.
And that was the music that was on in the early 70s.
Yeah, that's true.
And I was a little kid.
Someone Saved My Life Tonight is your favorite?
Well, that's not my favorite song, but in this show, I just think.
What's your favorite Elton John song?
I would probably say Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me. It's very dramatic.
I think my Elton John taste got damaged when I was a pop music DJ.
Oh, because you just heard
it. Because we played these songs over and over and over and over. So I like his kind of off.
Oh, the deep cuts. And I could name you some songs that but people wouldn't know them. So that's why I don't really mention
them.
I
think I've told you that his song, I'm not so sure it's a deep cut. It was kind of a hit. Mama Can't Buy You
Love. Oh, you always play that a lot as a
bumper.
It's
my favorite.
Oh, that was a top 10. That was a top 10 song, too.
That song.
Yeah, from 1979. They kind of brought him back a little.
Yep. Yep. All right. Well, let's take a break. And when we come back, I want to talk about hot dogs.
Mm.
Not favorite hot dog places, but this coming Wednesday is National Hot Dog Day. I'm pretty sure proclaimed so by Congress.
Who officially does this?
I think the president may have.
Well, yeah.
I think the president and joint session. It's the first thing that they've all agreed on in 50 years, that it should be National Hot Dog Day. And I've got some unusual hot dog ways to prepare hot dogs.
With ketchup?
That I want to share. And I want to get some from you. I'm going to be demonstrating some of these on television this coming week. That's all coming up in our the next half hour. We get into our food time show here. All right, 12:28 is the time. We'll update news in a minute and then get into our food time show for today.
Wiener talk.
Well, that was a late night show that used to be on WGN. I think that wasn't that a segment on Kathy and Judy's show?
Probably on Sex Wednesday.
Many years ago. On our Food Time show this week, we're going to be celebrating National Hot Dog Day. And I did this once before. We did a hot dog segment where I did a whole bunch of different kind of gourmet hot dogs. You know, like fancy schmancy toppings and things like that. You would have thought I murdered somebody's grandmother because I was messing with the traditional,
you are blasphemous,
Chicago style hot dog. So, you know, and I don't want to do a segment of here's how you make a Chicago style hot dog. I was like, that's not an interesting.
No, it's been done a million times.
Segment. So I am going to have Chicago style hot dogs. Not going to spend a lot of time on it on TV, but I am going to show them so you know.
With your cucumber salt.
That I am not a communist. I am going to have a bottle of ketchup on the table.
You should.
I don't plan on using it, but I respect that many people do.
You always have ketchup.
And I'm going to do three different hot dog recipes that are, that pay tribute to the classic ways, yet are a little bit different at the same time. Mm. So we'll see. I may get rung out of Chicago on a rail again, but what the hell? I'm going to give it a try. Well, that makes me want to listen.
Are you going to go to that?
I would like it.
You're a huge...
I've been to Earth, Wind, and Fire concerts.
That's what I mean.
214 times.
I must work in a quick announcement here that the news is sponsored by Oak Trace Senior Living.
Ooh, it sounds like somebody forgot to do that earlier.
Who could that have been?
Well, that's our first mistake we've ever made on this show.
Ever, yeah.
Document
in
that.
In the 13 years I've been here.
Write that down at 12:36, Shwani.
Okay,
the first
years?
Time.
It'll be 13 and a half, actually, now.
Like who was your newsman before,
seems
Dave?
Seems like a lot longer
do
than
you
that.
Remember? Don Norton was
oh,
in.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
They have a support group of people who used to do news on the show.
They get together.
Lyle Dean's in it.
In a church basement.
Right.
Hi, my name is Dave, and I work with Dean.
Rob Hart.
Hi, Dave.
Remember Rob Hart used to be? Oh,
of course.
He got out of radio completely.
No, he's on BBM.
He says, no, he's out of radio. Dead to me. Okay, Shwani, anything else you forgot that you need to do?
No, that's it.
Any barometric pressures you want to throw in or anything?
No.
Hey, you're going to like this. Listen to this, Shwani. This is right down your alley.
Hot dogs. Armor hot dogs. What kind of kids eat Armor hot dogs?
Fat kids.
Kids,
you couldn't sing this song today.
Even kids with chicken pox love hot dogs. Armor hot dogs.
You couldn't write that song today.
Can you imagine a commercial today?
It's all shaming.
Talk about fat kids.
It's all shaming. That's a bullying song today.
Even fat kids.
Eat fat kids, skinny kids, kids who climb on rocks.
Oh, my gosh.
Tall kids.
But look at this classic commercial. I mean, we were all singing along with it.
Oh, yeah, we knew it by heart.
And it's because of the love of the good old American hot dog. And which,
sort of born, not born here, but Oscar Mayer was here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's you know, one of, you know, some people say, you know, oh, look at the ingredients. You know what? Stop spoiling my hot dog fun with look at the ingredients.
Look at the ingredients of anything.
In moderation, a hot dog every once in a while is not that bad of a thing. And, you know, most people here in Chicago, at least anyway, like their Chicago style hot dogs. But there are a variety of toppings that people enjoy on hot dogs. And I'd like to talk about some of those right now, because this coming Wednesday is National Hot Dog Day. And on my television cooking segment this coming week, I'm going to be introducing three unusual ways to prepare hot dogs.
Now, did you come up with these?
To present these hot dogs.
And you came up with these?
I've been inspired by, you know, other recipes and things like that.
Right.
I don't think that I'm that much of a genius to, like, completely invent these kind of things.
But
inspired by other things, I've come up with some of these others. So I want to get to those. But I would like to hear what you are all putting on your hot dogs out there. And dare we approach the ketchup topic?
I don't know why this is such a... When I was in grammar school, we had hot dog day at good old St. Bartholomew on the northwest side. And we had only three choices. Ketchup, mustard, and relish.
Right.
And I used to get ketchup only, because I never liked mustard.
Blasphemer.
And I never even, when I was a kid, we didn't have it. I never, before I had hot dog day in grammar school, I never saw relish. I didn't even know what it was. We never had it in our house.
Hmm.
And I wasn't a big fan of mustard because, you know, ketchup is nice. It's got that nice sugar,
sweet,
sugary. Yeah,
sweet.
You know, mustard has, you know, when you're a little kid, you like sweet things. You
I think as a kid, we used to have mustard and ketchup on ours because that's what we put on our burgers.
Right.
So therefore, it was also okay on hot dogs. I don't mind it.
Yeah, I mean,
we put.
When did this?
I grew up in a Greek house where, you know, it's like feta cheese and a lamb's head and like all kinds of things would, you know, wind up on your plate.
When did this militant hot dog topping thing start?
Sure. I'm not sure.
It wasn't always around.
When you have a hot dog now, you put ketchup?
No. So now when I would go to a Gene and Jude's or some place like that, I will just get the Chicago style.
Oh, they'll kill you at Gene and Jude's.
Oh, they don't even give you ketchup.
If you, they have a sign up, right? Don't even ask for it.
In fact, you know what? There's a McDonald's next to the Gene and Jude's on the corner.
Yeah.
People were going to the McDonald's and asking for ketchup. They'd go to the drive-thru. They now charge 25 cents per packet.
Per packet of ketchup.
Because the Gene and Jude's wouldn't give it to them.
Wouldn't give it. That's funny. I personally don't put it on my hot dog anymore.
I don't really anymore.
But I
have no problems in doing it.
What do I care if somebody has ketchup on their hot dog?
I don't know if it was like in the 80s when this militant thing started, but my gosh.
Yeah, I don't understand the hatred for that.
And
so when I do my segment this week, I'm going to have many condiments out on the table, all the traditional ones, and a bottle of ketchup.
Good for you.
Because there may be people, our crew, and
I hope you have security, because there may be people driving up near Addison and Western, and you might get run over.
Right. I've dealt with some pretty controversial topics before, but never one as volatile as the ketchup.
I hope they have extra security.
Having ketchup out on my table while I'm doing, this. So I'm going to offer it. You know, if people want it, fine. And if you don't, keep walking. That's all you got to do.
What if I drove up?
Yeah.
During your segment?
Yeah.
Could I have? Can I find you?
Well, there's a security gate, so you can't just.
Oh, I couldn't get in.
Drive up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because I would like
Plus,
to taste.
Plus, many years ago, I've left photos of you at our front gate with a big red line through it.
Because
so
there's sometimes
I doubt you'd get through the.
I'm watching your segment. I'm like, God, I wish I was there now.
Well, you can come anytime that you want. You know, just let us know, and that way I can make sure I have plenty of extra security around me. these are the top. This is what I'm going to do with hot dogs. I am going to have traditional Chicago style hot dogs, steam buns,
onion,
the usual
mustard,
onion, relish, sport peppers, celery salt, pickle spear.
Oh, that's right, the celery salt, not cucumber salt, celery salt.
Pickles, pickle spear, all the usual.
The tomato.
So if somebody wants a traditional, you can have a traditional. But what I'm also going to offer is a Chicago style hot dog, but instead of on a bun, on a warm tortilla.
Soft
tortilla that I'm going to put on the grill to warm it up and put some char marks on it.
Oh.
Caramelize it a little bit. Take the tortilla off, put the hot dog on and all the traditional toppings, and then it's like a hot dog wrap.
So you fold it up, right?
Yeah.
Like a taco.
It's like a hot dog taco almost.
Right.
Right, yeah.
Oh, now that's not bad.
So I think that's going to be interesting.
I might show up for that one.
That might be fewer carbs also. So that might be my healthy
Well, there's still carbs in the tortilla.
Not, maybe not as much as a hot dog bun, though.
Really?
I don't know.
Oh.
I'm not sure.
But that, now that sounds, and it's then, and what's good about that is it's still easy to eat.
Yeah. Easy to eat with.
Because that's a key.
It's a one-hand thing. Yeah.
Because a lot of times when they, a lot of these places, they put so much on the hot dog that you can't even eat it.
Too much.
You that's, don't even.
That's my pet peeve with traditional
Chicago
style.
Everything falls off.
It's too much. You know, they call it dragging through the garden.
Yeah.
It's, I don't want that much garden.
It falls off.
I'm fine with just a small amount of garden. This is Dave, who's got some hot dog toppings for us. Hi, Dave. You're on WGN.
I call it either mock kimchi or enhanced sauerkraut. It's basically tinned sauerkraut heated up with sauteed radishes, anchovy paste, cayenne pepper, garlic, onions, and ginger and soy, and I have the butter, the hot dog butterflied, and to hold more stuff, I use not a regular hot dog bun, I use a brat bun.
Oh, see, that's a good idea.
So that's almost like an Asian take.
That's an Asian.
And of course, this is another variation. Of course, inspired by Big Bang Theory. Of course, not on a bun, but you know, remember the Sheldon Cooper character, his favorite thing was spaghetti with cut up hot dogs.
With
strawberry quick, the best tasting
strawberry
pink fluid.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, with the pink rabbit.
Oh my gosh, strawberry quick. That was the worst tasting beverage.
Well, the,
in my
the
opinion,
next best tasting pink food, of course, is Pepto-Bismol.
Right. Yeah, really, I can't think of too many foods that are pink, which are actually delicious. But wow, that what a blast from the past! Just hearing that,
an Asian take though, that's interesting.
Now you could just
like I say, and the other way, like I say, so that you fit, I take the hot dog, fry it, butterfly, fry it in oil, and then lay it in, and then top it with a. Like I say, the enhanced sauerkraut, that way it gets more of it put in. And
that sounds good.
Get it almost like a char style, like a New Jersey style hot dog.
Yeah, I like that. I like all that. And if all those ingredients seem overwhelming, you can just go to the store and buy a jar of kimchi. That would be a nice kimchi on a hot dog would be fantastic. You know what I've done on hot dogs and brats? I put Italian jardiniere on it.
Oh.
That works.
Put a little Italian jardiniere. It's super easy.
Right.
Instead of relish, and it's got a fantastic, bite.
Oil taste
to the whole thing. It gets a little oily. Dave, that's fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Let's get to Larry. What's your hot dog topping, my friend?
Yeah, I like to go to Portillo's, not Portillo's. Portillo's in Volo.
What is it called? Portillo's.
Portillo's in Volo.
Volo. By the Auto Museum.
Yep. North of there.
Okay.
But they're right around there. I get a double dog chili cheese with onions on it.
Oh, you gotta love a chili cheese dog.
You're not gonna drive eating that.
Yeah, those are always messy, but it's worth the mess.
Yeah, that's.
Yeah, you need a fork. Yeah, you need a fork and a knife with that. Yeah.
Speaking of chili dogs, one of the other recipes that I'm going to do on TV this coming Wednesday, I'm going to do a chili dog pizza. Chili dog pizza. So it's a pizza crust, regular pizza crust. You put a layer. I'm going to put a layer of canned chili on it.
So that's your base.
You can make your own if you want to.
But that's kind of like your red
sauce.
That's
my tomato sauce, right?
Right.
That's the base. I cut up the weenies. Into bite-sized pieces. I think I'm going to grill. I'm going to grill the hot dogs first because I want a little char taste on them.
So instead of your sausage, pepperoni,
I guess instead of sausage,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So I'm going to grill it, cut them up in bite-sized pieces, sprinkle it around the pizza, and then all the other hot dog toppings, onion, relish, pickles.
Would you put the pickle on that as well?
I think I would put...
Even with the chili?
I think I would put little bites of... I would cut it in bite-sized pieces and put it on.
Because that's kind of acidic. That's a little...
It doesn't bother me. But, you know, put whatever you want on it.
What about the shredded
And then cheddar? Top it all with some shredded cheese, cheddar cheese.
Nice.
Like you would on a chili dog.
And then you would melt the cheese?
I would put... Then I put the whole thing on my... I'm going to put it on my grill on a pizza stone or... indirect method on the grill, let it melt, and the pizza crust gets nice and crispy, and you've got yourself a chili dog on a pizza slice.
So would I eat that as a slice, or would I fold it?
I wouldn't fold it.
No.
I think it would
be
too messy.
Crusty. Yeah.
In fact, I think I would cut the pieces tavern style, small,
right,
to make it a little easier to eat, because that guy's going to be a little messy, for sure. Marianne, hi, you're on WGN.
Hey, how's it going, Dean?
Good.
You know, my mother and I ate hot dogs on tortillas years ago.
Is that right?
Yes, and I would put a piece of cheese in the middle, warm the tortilla up, roll the hot dog in it, and then the cheese helped the tortilla stay closed.
Yes.
And the hot dog didn't shoot out of the tortilla.
Well, you don't want your hot dog shooting out of your tortilla. Anybody knows that.
You might have to bleep that out, huh?
So wait a minute. So you take the tortilla and you put just a piece of cheese. And,
whatever kind of cheese you want on there. Make sure it covers most of the tortilla.
All right. So you've got the tortilla, the cheese, then the hot dog, and then your other toppings, right?
Whatever you want. We just ate it with cheese, with just like a cheese dog.
Oh, okay.
No, that would be good.
All right. That would be good.
And I'll tell you, the best hot dogs I had back in the 60s and 70s was at a place in Lincoln Square, it's not there, called Lubin's.
Lubin's.
And she would split that hot dog, put it face down on the grill, put a weight on top of it, and then she toasted the bun.
Oh, yeah. That's
and those are the days when you got a hot dog with whatever you want and a big basket of fries and a drink for like a dollar and a quarter.
Oh, that's good eating right there. That's all good eating.
Dem's good eats.
my mom would take a hot dog and score it with a knife like a spiral. Spiral around the whole hot dog. So then when she put it on the grill,
it would open
a little bit.
Right.
And it was so pretty. But also, you know, to the point of the previous caller, you put it on your toasted bun, and you can put a lot more things on it because now it's all opened up.
Yeah.
And the ingredients get inside of the grooves that you've made from the spiralization of it.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I never saw a spiraled hot dog.
Well, should have hung around our house.
I forgot to tell you last time I spoke to you, Saga Paul.
Oh, Fkari Sto.
Dikanis, Kala, Fedesto, Saga Paul.
Are you going to, do you just know a few Greek words plus the swear words that I urge you not to use?
Oh. Yeah, because I grew up at Lawrence in California.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's the big time. That's the St. Demetrius Greek church over there. I think their Greek fest is coming up in a few weeks.
We were babysitting. And the apartment faced Lawrence Avenue, and these three guys were walking across the street, and she said, "Yell Saga Po." I said, "What does that mean?" She says, "It means go to hell." So I said, "Saga Po," and they're going, and coming closer and closer. And when she told me what it meant, I said, "I'm going to kill you."
It actually means I love you.
I know. And there was one place, it was called Char House over on Oakton. By Lehigh, and the girl actually had on her license plate Saga Po.
Oh, see? Big Greek Fest going on Caldwell Avenue today.
St. Halabalaba.
St. Haralabus Greek Orthodox Church.
That's not a real word.
On Caldwell, just north of Tui.
Yeah, I know. It's by Barnaby's, and they have the police out there.
By Barnaby's. That's true. There is a Barnaby's on Tui up that direction.
Caldwell at Oakton, the last Barnaby's in the city.
Oh, is that right?
Yes, they've all closed down.
I've seen it. Barnaby's definitely a part of my misspent youth. Marianne?
Well, they have that one on Tui, and I was actually working at the one in Niles when the place in Tui sold, and within 2 weeks, it was a synagogue.
Oh, wow. That's
who hasn't gone to the temple and smell pizza?
Smell Italian sausage.
Your stomach will be going.
Wow. Okay. All right, Marianne, you have a good day. Try to open up a little bit. Come out of your shell.
I know. I'll try to have a good time.
There
with
you
it.
Go. And Marianne, one more thing. Sagapo.
Sagapo to you.
And I'll just apologize in advance for anything that we may do this coming week.
I'm going to bring my wise men that now have been to Bethlehem.
Oh, see?
I brought my three wise men when we went to
when you went to
Israel.
East, the Holy Land.
Yes, went to the Holy Land, and I brought them to the Church of the Nativity.
Wow.
So they have been there again. It took them 2,000 years, but my wise men made it back. Yeah.
Do they say made in Japan anywhere on them?
China.
Of course. Of course it's China, naturally. It's 12:58. Just real quick, we're talking about some hot dogs and hot dog toppings on our Food Time show for this week. I'm going to be cooking some special hot dog creations on my Wednesday TV cooking segment, including the hot dog taco, the chili dog pizza, and also I'm going to be doing a puffed pastry hot dog that it could not be simpler, and it's a really interesting and fun way. And all of these very...
A pig in the blanket.
Kind of like a pig in the blanket, or when you go to the airport and you see that Auntie Anne's...
Oh, like with the pretzel.
They wrap the hot dogs in a pretzel dough. This is going to be with puff pastry, a little bit different, but I just thought, this would be a fun thing, almost like a corn dog, really.
Right.
You just,
And they have corn dogs.
Wipe a little sauce with the mustard on it, and you'll be in town. So anyway, we're going to do all that Wednesday on TV. I will see you on Bob Surratt's show, as we do every weekday between 8 and 8:30, talking entertainment and having some fun. And I really urge you to tune in and listen to see which ancient interviews I'm going to be pulling out of the trunk.